When you step in the ring, your arms are just too short to box with God.
Fedor Emelianenko has signed a multi-fight deal with Bellator MMA.
A terrible role model, and do not follow my footsteps at all.
Took my clothes off. He walked into the bathroom with me and watched me shower.
I'm not impressed by your performance.
You tap from strikes. You're a little bitch. That's what I think.
I'm better than that. I'm good.
Yeah, do you ever get that? I do that all the time at restaurants. Every time pretty much a server comes, like, so how are you today? I'm like, oh, miserable. She's like, oh, that's really good. Oh, wait, what? And it's just totally throws
yeah.
I'm that asshole at a restaurant, I know.
No, that's okay. It breaks up the monotony a little bit.
That was always my thought. Like, these poor, like, it's usually women. It's almost always women, it seems. It's like, they're just going through this shit of just some asshole, and there's always just some guy like my dad. With dad, so he doesn't do it anymore. But still, when he was alive, he was like, flirt, make small talk. I'm like, dude, they don't give a shit. They want your fucking order, and they want to move on in life. Like, that's it. Just give them a good, give them fucking 20% and don't harass them. You know, if you have something really nice, tell the manager. That's it.
Yeah.
And if the waitress is, like, not pleasant, assume that they're having a shitty day. Because, you know, you wouldn't want to do that fucking job either. I'm buying time as I pet the doggy. Yeah, who's a good boy? Yeah. All right, go.
It's not always the most pleasant job in the world.
No, it's not. But, you know, there are worse jobs to have. But there are also better
Absolutely.
Jobs. There are better jobs.
There's always a bright side.
Actually, I don't really know how many jobs are worse than working for less than minimum wage as assholes harass you and hit on you and beg for free shit. But there are better jobs such as...
That's more rare, though, than you think. But, yeah, go ahead, transition.
Oh, I was totally going to be like, there are better jobs. Like, punching people in the face. And then I realized, like, I don't know. I don't really know. Like, long term, yeah, if you're, like, 20 years old and you're a server... Yeah, it might kind of suck, but when you're 50, you'll be okay. But if you're a professional fighter,
yeah, I mean,
when you're 50, you're dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of people. Yeah, where this is going smooth. I mean, there's a lot of reasons people wait tables, you know? I mean, sometimes, like, you've got a day job and you work part-time at night, or you've got kids and, you know, the husband works days and you can work a couple nights, or whatever the situation is. Sometimes it's a convenience factor, and you make more money than if you were working in retail or something at the mall. So, I mean, it depends on the place, the restaurant, and the part of the country you're in. But, I mean, servers can make decent money if they're in a nice restaurant that's fairly busy. It depends on the person and what they got going on in life, I guess.
Yeah, it's weird because, like, on the one hand, servers, in some respects, upend the idea of a minimum wage because they get paid less than minimum wage, but they make more than minimum wage on tips. On the other hand, the other day, my mother and I went out for we were going to go buy Thanksgiving dinner before she abandoned me. We'll get to that, and you'll feel bad. But
I can't blame her.
Before we went to – there was a new restaurant. It just kind of replaced an old restaurant. It's just a Greek joint. I don't know if they call them Greek places everywhere, but around here, but they just kind of like your – serves everything from on the menu. We call them a Greek restaurant. Not Euros and shit like that, but – So we tried it out, and it was fine. It was good, whatever. I can't think of the name right now. But I overheard one of the servers, and I swear to fuck, this woman had to be in her 20s, and she's talking about her 14-year-old daughter getting braces. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? Like, holy shit. I know. I'm actually happily becoming the old man that just doesn't get kids and stuff. Like, I just saw on fucking Facebook, and I posted it. It's from the Washington Times, but some university in Wisconsin. Did you see that about the post-it note?
No idea.
Oh, fuck. Somebody created like a I don't know if it was a table or whatever, where people could use a post-it note, a 3x5 post-it note, and they could post their feelings about the election. I'm like, I don't know, whatever. Like, I don't, you know, whatever. Like, honestly, like, all the, oh, don't protest, like, whatever. People are upset. They can vent. It's fine. I don't care. But somebody wrote on a post-it note, get over it, pussies. That's all they wrote. they shut the whole thing down. They called the cops about a hate crime. People are now needing counseling. And I'm like, are you out of your fucking mind? You think that's hate speech? You didn't meet my father. My father once got, he was drunk and just honestly said, you're the biggest mistake in my life and I regret having you. That's hate speech. Your little post-it note from an anonymous person just, I don't know, get over it. God damn, I hate kids these days. I'm so glad I don't have any. No offense.
I'm briefly looking at that now. Is that legit, you think?
It's from the Washington Times, which is not the Washington
Post. What is that?
The Washington Times is the, it's a real newspaper. It's more right.
Okay.
It's a more right-leaning newspaper. The Washington Post is a more established paper in D.C. area. But, you know, Times is still a legit newspaper, and they're just quoting from the university itself. I can't imagine. Huh. It's not one of the fake news sources. It may be a slanted news source in the sense of,
sure,
you know, the, if you want to call the Wall Street Journal versus the LA Times slanted, but it's certainly not going to wholesale make something up out of thin air.
Yeah. That's actually pretty funny to write. I would have died if I saw that.
I feel like the entire half-guarded website is that post-it note right there. Just like, it's just whatever we can say to just upset somebody. It doesn't matter if you're liberal or conservative.
But it's weird because it's got like a double meaning. It's like, you know what? If you rephrased, you know, suck it up, you're basically saying, you know what, we need to move on. It's going to be okay. Things will get better. Give Trump a chance, whatever it might be. But it's just like really harsh. You know, you can swing it that way where it was like, hey, I was saying, you know, toughen up, get over it, move on. Granted, the person didn't phrase it very well, which makes it hilarious.
Like, in no way, shape, or form should anyone ever see something like that and think, well, I don't feel good. I need a day off from school and all that shit. It's like,
yeah,
come on. Like,
I agree.
Oh, my gosh. But unfortunately, your kids will probably be even worse because they're younger. You have no control over them. Like, parents think they raise their kids, but looking back in it, my parents didn't raise me. It's like the first day of school, whatever clique you fell into, if you got lucky and you were with the cool kids, you were cool for the rest of your life. And then when puberty hit, if like you didn't have lots of weird pimples and like an awkward stage and like, or whatever, and your voice didn't crack every 5 seconds, you were fine. So yeah, it's everything's out of your control. And, you know, we live and then we die and that's all we have in life. And, I'm very philosophical lately, so that's all there is.
Yeah.
It's because of Westworld. Yeah.
That's I have not seen that show on HBO, right?
Yeah, never mind then.
I was reading something. Hang on. Is it basically like a new version of Lost? I read that somewhere.
No, it's not.
No.
People.
Okay, that's
it. It's like Lost in that it's a pop culture thing and it has lots of mysteries. But
yeah.
First of all, Jonathan Nolan is one of the main creative forces behind it. Christopher Nolan's brother, Dark Knight, Memento, all that. It's tightly written. It's 8 episodes in of a 10-episode first season. I think they're only going to do 2 seasons. It's based off of a Michael Crichton movie from the late 70s. But I literally rewatched the entire season in a day because I'm so captivated by it. I'm starting it over again a third time now.
Wow.
Things are tight. Things make sense. And even if they, you know, don't pay off perfectly, the questions raised as far as artificial intelligence, what is the idea of consciousness, what does it mean to be a human being, are utterly fascinating to me. And they're questions that I've thought about for a long, 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 long time. And even though Sam Harris doesn't know it, he and I have been debating about this for a while. But I fucking love the show. And it started out kind of like, I'm like, I kind of see where they're going. And yeah, there's like a big twist, but the big twist isn't like, oh, that's what got me into it. It was more subtleties. Some of the, just the little details and some of the lines. I'm like, this is so good that it shouldn't be possible. Like, I know it really, like I've seen really good television, really good movies. But even then, like some part of me is like, as great as, like, I'll just say The Sopranos was. There was some part of me like, okay, it's not as great as Tolstoy. It's not as great as Dostoevsky or Shakespeare. You know, like, fuck the fucking Shakespeare, man. Like, why do we even bother after he came along? It's just embarrassing. But this stuff, I'm like, please don't let me down, guys, because you're on to something big here. So, yeah, I'm loving it.
All right. I'll have to check it out. It's so hard for me to even like pick up a new show. But have you seen? I've watched a little bit of it with Beth. But Stranger Things on Netflix.
I watched a couple of episodes, but it just didn't catch me. It felt like that J.J. Abrams movie 8mm, where it was like it had a very similar tone, and it was this romanticized version of the 1980s, like growing up in the 80s, and I can completely relate to it. A lot of the scenes, I should say, seem like right out of my childhood, but I just didn't quite feel it. It felt like somebody paying homage to the Goonies, but doing it in a different, with a different narrative.
Yeah, it's funny because it's like, if I watch like two episodes of a show, it's like I'm either going to watch all of it or none of it. So it's like we're like I want to say like 5 or 6 episodes in. So it's like, you know what, we'll try and get through this season, but it's tough to find time when you know you're working 4 nights a week and whatever. That's my problem
with a wife and children and all those responsibilities in life. Not all of us have just 2 dogs to take care of and a family that's abandoned him on Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that's rough.
Actually,
anyway.
By the way, because you were joking about it, and I purposely did not respond to it just to do it here. The reason I'm spending Thanksgiving by myself, more or less, is that normally what we do is my brother and his fiance now come down to the town where my mom and I live, and we all do Thanksgiving dinner together and move on. Like on Wednesday nights, usually my mom's best friend comes over, and we all do grilled cheese sandwiches and have squash soup. I don't eat the soup because it's disgusting. But her friend is in Germany on some fucking tour with her daughter and her sister and all that. Like, my mom's best friend, Amy, I've mentioned before, genius, blah, blah, blah. Yesterday, my grandmother is in a nursing home, but she's independent nursing. Her caretaker, whatever, they called my mom, said, I think she should maybe go to assisted living, and she kind of, like, thought it'd be nice if you came to visit my mom, who, despite being just the most blatant Lutheran ever, like Midwest Norwegian Lutheran, and everybody loves their mother, but like everyone looks at my mom's like, she's the nicest lady ever. I'm like, she's past progressive Minnesota nice bitch a little time, but everybody likes my mom. And, but my mom just, I gotta go. So my mom is on her way right now to Sioux Falls, South Dakota to spend time with my 95-year-old grandmother for a while. And 95 seems old, and she'll probably die. But on the other hand, her mother was 101 when she died. And my mom, my grandmother, she's 95. She just had a pacemaker put in like 6 months ago. That was the only thing she's ever had done in her life. Prior to that, she'd had her appendix taken out, and she was just taking an aspirin every once in a while. Like, she's one of, like, those fucking, you know, Depression era, World War II, just tough as shit. And, like, the doctor gave her pills, but pain pills, and she doesn't want to take them all. And I'm like, Grandma, just fucking take the pain pills. They're there for a reason. And then in the back of my mind, I'm like, well, don't take them all. You know, leave a few behind. But so, yeah, like again, it's just a genuine South Dakota, you know, a woman who lived in Chicago for a while, D.C., South Dakota. She was literally known throughout the entire state during the 60s because she was known as the Donkey Lady. Because not like I'm known as a donkey man for various reasons, but my grandma would hand sew donkeys in support of the Democrat National Committee. And, like, she did, like, thousands of these, and she became known. And, like, when McGovern ran for, like, she had letters back and forth from McGovern, George McGovern, you know, who got slaughtered by Nixon. And all because my late aunt, who died in, like, her 20s, I never met her, She subscribed to a magazine and she didn't get the magazine. Like somebody fucked up. And my grandma just wrote a letter to McGovern. McGovern launched some like investigation and found out that like this company had been defrauding people and all kinds of shit. And later on, my grandma did some, like she's just always like writing to Congress people and getting stuff done. I'm like, what is going on? She worked at a gift shop in the airport, the airport basically in South Dakota. And the one time Tom Daschle came through and my grandma's like, hey, is it okay if this company has a life insurance policy on me? Is that appropriate? And he went through and did a big investigation. And, like, yeah, grandma's a – and she's also a huge racist. Like, this, despite being, like, the biggest Democrat ever who voted for Hillary, voted for everybody else, she did not vote for Obama. I'm like, grandma, holy shit. Like I'm a fucking, like, conservative Republican. And even I'm like, yeah, you know, Obama's kind of a nice guy. Like, if I was ever going to vote Democrat, Obama's the dude. He's kind of nice. Oh, no.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So she's going to die. But, and so, therefore, I'm left alone. But my brother's going to come down tomorrow without his fiance, which I don't – nobody – neither one – or she'll never listen to this. He probably won't. I actually kind of like her. But when he and I just get together and fuck around for a couple of hours, it's always good to have, you know, bro time.
Yes. Yeah,
by the way, absolutely. Everybody, yes. I'm completely killing time because all we have to do is review the fucking weekend from fucking hell and then and then preview the weekend from, I don't know, purgatory. This shit coming up in fucking Melbourne where it's not even a real city, I think, so.
So here's the deal. There were four shows this past weekend. Okay. Now I'm going to be honest and transparent here. I did not watch all four shows. I watched some of each, even Invicta. I watched that main event. So we're not going to go through every fight and every card, but I'm going to put you on the spot and ask you four questions on each show. Can you handle that?
So long as you maybe like pull up my play-by-play commentary. Yeah, but I fucking watched all of this shit. I had multiple screens going at times. I fucking suffered. Oh, especially when I thought that Friday was going to be Invicta and Bellator, but it's just Invicta. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? I have to do three shows in one day. I'm going to die. This is ridiculous.
So on each card, I want your overall impression of each show, your most impressive fighter, your most disappointing fighter, and the best fight on the card. So let's start with Invicta. Overall, how would you grade the show?
All right, my impression from Invicta overall, it was not a good show by Invicta standards.
Okay.
And I say that because Invicta generally has pretty good entertaining shows. It just wasn't good by their standards. By a regular MMA show, it was fine. Nothing was awful. The main event, Tanya Evinger kind of got fucked a little bit.
The foot on the face with the armbar, right?
Yeah, exactly. As Dazza from the site wrote about. And, you know, that was a very legitimate – oh, for what people don't know, the Russian chick she fought – cinched in an armbar. Evinger defended it, and part of the defense is to put your foot on the opponent's face, use that as leverage to pull your arm out. Completely legal. It's not stopping the face, it's just using it as a leverage point. The referee said, you can't do that. Evinger had to stop, and at that moment, then her arm got taken, and she had to tap out from the armbar. Kind of disappointing. Semi-main was Angela Hill. She kind of, you know, she won her fight. She was fine. I didn't think that I saw somebody that I'm like, holy shit, she's really like stepped up to the next level. Get her in the UFC right now. And overall, as a show, it's kind of an interesting show because it was a 20th Invicta show. And they treated it as like an anniversary show, which is kind of weird because it's, I mean... 20th anniversary sounds good, but you do like three or four shows a year. That's not, it's not like the, you know, the 20th anniversary of the UFC or anything like that. This right. is like, you know, 5 years or four and a half or whatever. Like, and they were showing like all the great champions who are in the UFC and all the challenge, like all these people who come through Invicta, and it actually did a really, really good job of making Invicta seem important. And to the point where, like, yes, Invicta's like, we acknowledge our, where we are in the world, but guess what? What you're seeing right now today, this is the future. You guys are ahead of the game. Kind of ECW-esque in that way. And given they always run in, the something temple in, Kansas City, they kind of have established their home base there. Like I say, it's an overall show. Nothing stood out, except for kind of the fuckery in the main event. But, there are worse ways to spend a Friday night, and there are definitely better ways, especially with women, to spend on a Friday night. But in this day and age, we got to respect the women. Oh, wait, no, I don't. Trump's president. I don't have to respect women anymore. Oh, yeah. Grab by the... Yeah.
Most impressive fighter on the show.
Just out of the back of my mind, I'll say Angela Hill. Just because... Okay. She went 5 rounds. Her striking was on point. When she was on the ground, she was on her back a couple of times. She came close on a triangle at one point, showing that she's developing some more well-rounded skills. She's clearly a very impressive talent physically, which is always one of those, got to be very careful, because when you start talking about, like, physical attributes of black athletes, it's kind of like a iffy area. But I thought that she showed composure. She didn't overextend herself. So, I'll give props to her for that.
Okay. Who had the worst day on the show?
Tanya Avenger. Just getting, yeah. Just the way that she got screwed. Like, she didn't embarrass herself. She did fine. But the fight was really short. It was like in the first round she got tapped. She shouldn't have gotten tapped, but, even with the referee saying don't put your foot on the face, she still was in a position to get tapped that you don't see from a lot of, fighters in that regard. So, I would say that was probably, if you have to single out one person. And again, Invicta is a weird show because you have people like Avenger, who's a true veteran of the sport. You can call her world class at 135 just because there aren't that many great fighters at 135. Yet on the same card, you also have women making their pro debut. And, right. To put that in perspective, like today I was in the gym and there's a guy talking about, like, yeah, I'm making my pro debut. And he's like, I'm not kidding. And yes, professional fighters don't always train in the gi, but he needed help tying his white belt. He didn't know how to tie a belt. And sure, maybe he's wrestled a lot and he's got great Muay Thai and all that shit, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, dude, you can't tie a fucking belt in jiu-jitsu and you're having a pro fight? So, a pro debut doesn't always mean a ton.
Right. And if you had to go back and watch one fight again, best fight on the show?
No idea.
Perfect.
Okay.
So then we also had let's do Bellator next. That was on this past Saturday night. Overall impression of the show?
It was there. I thought that, in general, Michael Chandler acquitted himself well, but there does seem to be the weird UFC, I don't want to say curse, but the UFC just seems to have a lot of luck that when they caught a guy, they caught him at the exact right time. Because Benson Henderson once again lost. And, it's not like Henderson got blown out, but Chandler, I think it was the first round, hit this beautiful arching German suplex. It was like...
That was brutal.
Like, it's funny because when you see it, I'm like, I'm sure in a fight, it actually doesn't do that much damage. Because, it's more or less taking on the shoulder blades. Henderson's super flexible and shit like that. But it looked so impressive. And, again, Chandler's a guy, he's beaten Eddie Alvarez. He's beaten the former UFC champion, two former UFC lightweight champions. He's clearly a top 10 talent. And he went out there, and I thought he won a comfortable decision over,
Ben Henderson.
Ben Henderson. I'm trying to find my comments here. And I pulled up the wrong fucking post here. So, I thought Michael Chandler did very well for himself.
Yeah, probably the most impressive fighter on the show too, I would say.
Yeah.
Most disappointing fighter, I think this is probably pretty unanimous on both our parts, Michael Venom Page.
That's exactly what I was going to say, yeah. For a guy that was fighting somebody that was kind of a, I don't want to say a total gimme, but someone set up for him to look impressive and do his, you know, basically Bellator's version of Wonder Boy is what he is. And he's looked more impressive in the past. He did not put away Fernando Gonzalez.
He wasn't even like engaging. It was almost like one of those, it reminded me of Anderson Silva back in the day where he just was clowning around and knew the guy couldn't really hang with him. I'm trying to think of the fight, the Damian Maia fight.
Or the Talos Latis, yeah, where he's just screwing around and just, you know, just doing dumb things. And again, it was like a guy who's got a lot of talent, but you also realize the holes in that style, which is, if you're really patient, guys like Anderson Silva or Michael Page or whatever, they have a bit of an issue with that. They need you to be, to get frustrated and to come in. And when you don't, they don't always respond that well to it. And they're talented enough to win decisions, but really their strength lies in just preternatural ability to counterpunch and counterstrike in general. And when you don't give them that chance, they kind of get lost, as opposed to somebody like, you know, stereotypically Wanderlei Silva or Shogun Hua, who, if you don't engage them, they'll just blitz you and look really good that way.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's the curse of a counter-striker, I guess. Mm-hmm. And then, best fight on the card?
Probably Gilmer Lindis' wife knocking out somebody real quick. Or the main event. The main event wasn't... yeah. The main event was actually... Again, it was two top 10 level talents engaging in a very competitive fight. I don't think that if you watched it, you were disappointed. If you didn't watch it, it's not like you have to go out of your way to download it and find it. It wasn't Fight of the Year or anything like that. But there is something to be said for two guys who are very good, basically evenly matched, and having a competitive five-round fight.
Sure. Did you get to see Baby Slice on the undercard?
No, I did not.
Neither did I.
Did he lose? I think he lost.
He did, yeah. He got choked out by a guillotine.
At least he's alive. Yeah, I went there, everybody.
Yeah, no, that was good. A couple other things we should mention from that Bellator show. They announced Matt Mitrione versus Fedor Emelianenko, which seems like a really, really bad fight for Fedor, in my opinion. I've been watching a couple different how should we term them, MMA journalists talk about this fight. And it's like, they're calling it a good fight. I'm like, what have you been watching the last 5 years? Fedor essentially lost to a low level UFC light heavyweight 6 months ago.
You can't think of his name right now, can you?
I can't. Hang on. It's going to come to me. I can't think of his name. Fuck. Yeah, Fabio Maldonado. Anyway.
Did I tell you about the other week when I was talking to my brother about, like, yeah, there was a guy who's ranked number 15 at featherweight. I couldn't think of his name. And he just goes, what is wrong with you that you think you need to know the top 15 in every division? I'm like, what? This is what – I love this stuff. He goes, are you sure you don't have Asperger's? I'm like, fuck you. You know I don't have Asperger's. I'm just a jerk.
I can't admit, here's the thing. We say this every week, anything can happen in a fight. Yeah, I mean, Fedor could land a big punch. Mitrione's chin in his last fight, he got rocked. Like, Mitrione's not a world beater by any stretch, but he's gonna have 30 pounds on Fedor. He's been more active, he's younger, he's fought better guys over the last 5 years. Like, this is not a good matchup. I'm shocked that Fedor even signed this fight after fighting Maldonado and Jaideep Singh. Why I can remember his name and not Maldonado, I don't know. But that's how the mind works sometimes. It makes no sense on Fedor's part. Maybe he's getting paid a boatload of money, but I don't want to say you should be playing the Kimbo role at this point in his career, but I would say at the moment he's probably the biggest draw for Bellator. He's clearly the biggest name, most famous fighter they have. If he's got anything left in the tank and he truly has signed a multi-fight deal with Bellator, put him in there with Dada 5000. Like, who cares? What is the benefit of risking him in a fight with Mitrione? Mitrione's never really going to be a draw either.
And we kind of discussed this before where, you know, there Mitrione, it's not like he's the worst opponent. And I can actually understand why Fyodor might take the fight. Because, stylistically, a prime Fyodor would just have such a speed advantage that he'd probably leap in with one of his leaping hooks and just crack Mitrione and drop him. But he's also, Fyodor's probably in near 40 or whatever. Like, he ain't a spring chicken anymore. I remember very, very specifically, it was March 2003 when he defeated Rodrigo Nogueira for the Pride title. It was Pride 25, because it was one of the greatest shows in Pride history. Dan Henderson and Shungo Oyama had an awesome fight in the undercard. Quentin Jackson fought Kevin Randleman. It was fucking scary how good he was. And we had this incredible passing of the guard, pardon the pun, where Fyodor just annihilated Nogueira inside of Nogueira's guard. That was 13 years ago. Seriously.
Yeah.
There are literally people that were born that day who probably have children right now. Which is really scary. This is a statement on society, but also puts in perspective how long ago that was. That's a long fuck. I was 20, and I'm a 33-year-old loser now. That's a long ass fucking time to go by. But Mitrione himself is, he's probably in his. I think he's probably passed on the wrong side of 35.
Yeah, I think he's 37.
Exactly. I was gonna say 37. He's not a spring chicken, so he's not exactly young, but he's probably going to age a little better, just being a better athlete, I think, from the get-go. I still think Bobby Lashley is probably the biggest money fight. I don't see what's to gain from this, but Bobby Lashley's also 40, so what's to gain from that? Bellator's heavyweight division is a joke, and we all know this because their heavyweight champion fought in the UFC this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, to me, though, I would try and just drag the Fedor thing out. If he gets destroyed by Mitrione, they've got nothing left. Put him in, true freak show fights where he can win and draw money for you. Obviously, competitively, since Coker's taken over there, they haven't cared about having a meritocracy or who the best guy in the world is. That's not what they're going for. They're going hardcore in the direction of getting ratings, getting eyeballs on the show. This could easily be the end of Fedor, but I don't like his chances in this fight at all.
And what's interesting is that if I'm Bellator, I would basically say I have three heavyweights for you. You have Matt Mitrione, Chuck Congo, and Bobby Lashley. Those would be the biggest names for Fedor to fight.
Maybe. See, I try and find somebody old. Just bring in some old guy and people just watch Fedor.
They're all old.
I know, but I mean, somebody Fedor would be a favorite against. I don't favor him. I don't even favor him against Lashley.
Honestly.
I really don't.
If you could, and I know there's...
After that Maldonado fight, come on.
Oh, no, I don't think Fedor is competitive with any real modern fighter, but, I mean, look, the ideal opponent for him, if you could get it licensed and you can't, would be Ken Shamrock.
Yeah.
Because, Ken can fake weight or whatever. It doesn't matter, but that's never going to happen. Otherwise, I think Bobby Lashley probably would mean the most. And it's also probably, if you're Bellator, it's your biggest chance. But it's all moot because Fyodor's old news. No one gives a shit anymore. I mean,
yeah.
When you think about the dream fights that people want to see him fight in UFC, it was Randy Couture for years, and then maybe Brock Lesnar. Neither one of them are even close to relevant anymore in mixed martial arts. The heavyweight division, even though it's filled with a bunch of guys who are old, has passed Fyodor by. And no one would ever want to see him fight Velasquez. Verdum smoked him. Stipe would fucking murder him. even I think modern day Alistair would probably beat Fyodor. So
I mean, realistically, in 2016, he's barely a light heavyweight, let alone a heavyweight.
Which honestly, that brings me to something I was just thinking of. Maybe the best opponent for Fyodor, from money perspective, possibility of winning, and everything, is Rampage.
Yeah.
I think that would be very interesting. Rampage would be happy to go up to heavyweight at 220 or whatever. They'd be the same size. It would be probably the biggest name. I think Rampage is far and away the biggest name Bellator has. He's always had, I think, underrated drawing ability. I think he's drawn just way better than people give him credit for. And yep. I think people would get into it a little bit. But, whatever. He's going to fight. I don't know what the fuck Rampage is going to do. He's just going to drive a car hopped up on Monster Energy drinks into the side of a ravine or something.
I mean, the bottom line with Fyodor, too, is and since the Bigfoot loss in Strikeforce, it's like the writing's been on the wall. I mean, he got destroyed against Bigfoot. I mean, look at what
Dan Henderson.
But that the Henderson fight, I think, was after Bigfoot. But
yeah.
Bigfoot destroyed him, and then look at where Bigfoot's career went. Like the next 5 years, he was like, average heavyweight who got knocked out every other fight.
In fairness, Bigfoot had to get off the gas. So
I agreed, but it was never like Bigfoot was a truly elite heavyweight at any point in his career. He was good in Strikeforce. It was like once he came to the UFC, it was like, you know what? He's not going to be heavyweight champ.
For fuck's sake, Dan Henderson's barely been a top 10 middleweight and he beat Fyodor's ass.
Absolutely. And bottom line is that was over 5 years ago. That was five and a half years ago.
I was there. That was in Chicago here. Was it 5 years ago? God,
it was July 2011. The Henderson fight was July of 2011.
I hate getting old. It screws with my mind. I have all these memories and this is how memories go. But I'm like, it feels like yesterday. And it's like, oh, that was a decade ago. It's like, oh shit, I'm that guy.
Another person who made an appearance at the Bellator show was GSP. He took a pick with Fyodor, Scott Coker, and Rory McDonald. I think he put it up, or he didn't. His management put it up on his Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook pages, interestingly enough. Is that a signal to the UFC? What do you think he was thinking by doing that?
Maybe under the old UFC regime, perhaps, because it was just, I mean, you could say that both Fertitas was basically Lorenzo and Dana and then Joe Silva. And I could see them being like, what the fuck? But even, they never seem to really, really care about shit like that. Like, this has been happening forever. I can't see WME giving a shit. They're just going to see it as like, whatever. He's just another lion. And we don't care. And, it's just a photo, and it really truly does not matter. This will come down to a contract interpretation, and if they have to go to litigation, GSP will. I think he's 35 right now. If he's 35, and this really puts in perspective, and I'll say this using the lawyer hat now. I sit up. Now on my couch. The dog looked at me as I cleared my throat. You file a lawsuit against an individual on January 1st. You generally, in the state of Illinois, but most jurisdictions, have 60 days to get service of process in the person. Otherwise, you have to get a special request from a judge, and you always get it. So basically what happens is you file a lawsuit. You get service of process. In Cook County, you got to use the sheriff. The sheriff never gets fucking service because he's a fucking useless piece of shit. So you got to send $50 and you get a private process server. You serve the opposition party with notice of the lawsuit. They get the lawsuit. They then have time to review it. If they want to, they can just not respond and it goes to motion for default, which always gets vacated. But then what usually happens is the other side gets the lawsuit and says, no, they file what we call an answer. And they answer the complaint. Not a reply, an answer. They file an answer. You go before the judge, and the judge says, all right, you filed a lawsuit. Yep, you filed an answer. Sometimes they, before they even file an answer, they file a motion to dismiss. There are two types of motion to dismisses. One is for lack of, we'll say, legal grounding. One of them is for lack of factual grounding. And if it's a legal grounding, it's different. Factual grounding is the other chance. You file a motion to dismiss. Say you get the lawsuit in January. Lawsuit filed January 1st. You get served January 21st. You have usually 28 days after that. We're at the end of February now, almost. You file your you file a motion to dismiss. You file a motion to dismiss. The other side gets 28 days to respond to your motion to dismiss. Then you get usually 14 days to reply to their response. And the motion to dismiss is just to say this case has no merit. So now we're talking mid-March, late March, before you even get done with the motion to dismiss. Usually a motion to dismiss is not granted. It's very rare, and if it is granted, they just amend the complaint and they move on. Lawyers aren't stupid. They know how to draft this shit. Then after the motion to dismiss has been denied, you're already 3 months into the process. Then the opposition side, the defendant, gets 28 days, usually, to respond to the complaint. And what he has to do when he responds is essentially look at every factual accusation and say, yes, I admit that. No, I deny that. So he does his 28 days. Then the other side gets some time to look it over, anywhere from 14 to 28 themselves. And then we either go to motion for summary judgment. Takes a bit of a time, or we go through discovery phase. Discovery can take anywhere from 4 to 10 months. You gotta go through, you have to take depositions, you have to do all this shit. Then you file all kinds of, like, without even trying, and I've told people this before, I could file a lawsuit against somebody and tie them up in court on simply procedural grounds, having no factual basis for my lawsuit, no chance to ever win. And keep that case alive for 2 to 3 years without breaking a sweat. And like every lawyer knows he could do this. I always tell people, like, if you want to stop paying your fucking mortgage, I keep in that house for 3 years without anything. You don't have to pay anything. So if the UFC wants it, they can just drag it out. And suddenly by the time George St. Pierre is over, yeah, maybe St. Pierre wins. Maybe the UFC is completely wrong. He'll be 38, 39 years old.
Yeah.
His options are to fight in the UFC or to not fight. That's right. It. Unless St. Pierre gets a Hail Mary and gets the whole contract basically declared void. Not voidable, void, right away, and then he can sign Bellator. But what's he going to do? Is he really going to go to Bellator and fight for what? Are they going to pay him $10 million? Are they going to pay him $15 million to fight in a fucking spike against who?
Fedor.
Well, yeah. Is he going to fight Douglas?
That I would watch. Yeah. That I'm okay with.
But is he going to fight Douglas Lima on fucking pay-per-view? Fuck off. Also, yeah. Hold on. Dogs, get down here! So, yeah. It's going nowhere. He fights in the UFC or he doesn't fight. It's just a logistical reality of the law.
Right. Okay.
I feel
so
smart.
The third show of past weekend was UFC Fight Night 99, which was exclusively on Fight Pass. It came from Belfast, Northern Ireland. Overall impression of this show?
As I was watching, I'm like, huh, this is a good show. Like, one fight after another, I'm like, this is pretty good. It hit a bit of a lull in the main card, but I'm like, I'm not really feeling this. But the main event then delivered. I thought that the announcers were absolutely atrocious. I thought that bordering on unprofessional.
Was it Dan Hardy and guy?
The guy who I refer to as other British guy. Like, they were, like, they just had certain favorites and, like, pardon my homophobic remarks, but they have cocks in their mouths so bad. I mean, they were fucking slobbing on all kinds of knobs on this shit. And it was just like, are you kidding me? Like, they just clearly had favorites, and I don't even think it was necessarily favorites. It was almost like, old school pro wrestling, like this is the baby face and we're going to like try to put him over. And it was just, it didn't come across well to me. But as a show, I thought it was, it was one of those shows where on paper you go, what the fuck am I watching? like really? And there were a lot of moments where I just kind of rolled my eyes when they were like, oh, this guy's from Scotland. He's got the home crowd support. I'm like, you understand Scotland and Northern Ireland are different places, right? Even though they're technically all the United Kingdom. But I'm like, no. And then, like, you can't claim that somebody from Scotland is also Northern Irish and then claim that Northern Ireland is, like, home to Conor McGregor. Like, no! The fucking IRA committed hundreds of murders about this shit. Fucking, like, you know, the one with Brad Pitt and all that, the devil something or whatever. You know, it's all about this shit. Like, Irish people and Northern Irish people are totally different. You can't just lump them all together. Just because they all have a kind of similar sounding Cockney accent doesn't mean that they're the same. And so, but other than that.
Well, UFC has had an issue with that for years. Remember that t-shirt they made a year or two ago?
Not only do I remember it, it was actually featured on our play-by-play.
I didn't see it. I should have looked.
Yeah, nobody, even you don't fucking read this shit. What's the point of doing this stuff, motherfuckers?
I'm sorry. I don't blame you. So honest. I didn't have time. Here's the thing. I love MMA more than probably anybody, but it's like I don't have the hours in the day. I apologize to everyone, all two people listening to this, but I can't watch, what would it have been? Like 4 hours of Bellator, 4 hours of Invicta, 6 hours of this UFC show, 6 hours of the next UFC show. I don't know how many hours that is, but it's like 20 hours in 2 days. I can't do that. I wish I could. If I had nothing going on, I would have watched that whole card probably or run out and paused it and caught up. But I just couldn't even get there in the last 3 or 4 days. And then you're looking at that. But on top of it, you look at the card and, you know, am I going to rush to go watch Kwon Ho Kwak on the undercard of this Belfast show?
That was actually a good fight, and I had a lot of duck jokes in there.
I'm sure, but here's the thing. I'm sure it was a good fight, but at the same time, there's a lot of good fights on every weekend. It's hard to watch four cards in one weekend and catch all the good fights, mediocre fights, or bad fights because people have shit they gotta do.
Yeah, when you put it that way, and I really think about what I did on Saturday, when in the span of 12 hours, I basically watched, 16, 17 hours of fighting.
Right.
Like there's something wrong with me. I have problems. I'm lonely.
I guess. Well, that's why you're talking to me right now. All right. So anyway, we digress. So most impressive fighter on the show, Musasi?
Yeah, Gegard Mousasi came out just dominated Uriah Hall, just got a quick takedown real easy, swept him and just ground and pounded him. Hall had no answer. It was actually, I was actually surprised at how poor Hall performed. Because, you know, Hall is up and down. He's got the Vitor Belfort BJ Penn syndrome. But he's still, you would think he'd have some physical ability just to do things. He just looked like nothing. There were actually a couple guys in the show I thought did pretty well, but Mousasi, far and away, was the guy that you walked away going, okay, yeah, he solidified himself. He was number 5 coming into it. I don't know if he'll rise any higher than that, given the talent at middleweight.
Right.
Unfortunately, two of the guys were supposed to fight this upcoming weekend are fighting because God hates us. But, Mousasi, I mean, look, he did what he's supposed to do, which is, he fought a top 10-ish guy, and if you're really a contender, you dominate those guys, and he did it.
Yeah, absolutely. Made it look easy. Would you say Hall was probably the most disappointing performance, or was there somebody on the undercard where you're like, he should have had a better fight than he did? He or she.
Hall is up and down to me, so I can't say I'm necessarily disappointed. I mean, I'm kind of disappointed because I think Uriah Hall if he's on his game, has the ability to be really special, but he is, yeah. he just wasn't there. So setting him aside, I actually think that, it's kind of a two for one. Kyoji Horiguchi just outclassed Ali Bagutinov. And Ali's not a bad fighter. He went five with the Mighty Mouse, but this is the first time I've watched Horiguchi. I went, holy shit. He's really, really good. Cause he was wearing out Ali. He beat him to the punch every time. He took him down. He took the back. It was a decision, but he was just a much, much better fighter. And you generally at flyweight don't see guys in that top 10, top 5-ish realm look that much better than somebody unless it's Mighty Mouse. And Horiguchi definitely impressed to me.
Do you know what year Horiguchi was born?
I never want what years in, right? 2016, 06, 96. I'll go, that'd be 92?
No, 90.
Damn.
But I just feel like he's been around a while. It's like, I was just looking at some of his stats. I'm like, he was born in 1990? My God.
That's an Asian thing.
No, I don't mean based on his looks. I feel like he's been around a while. Cause he fought Mighty Mouse, it feels like maybe it wasn't that long ago. I was gonna say it felt like a couple years ago, but, I don't know. I was just surprised he's as young as he is. What else do we have on that show? Best fight?
I would say, I don't know if that's the best fight, there are actually several good fights. Two that really stuck, a couple that stuck out to me. Justin Ledet beating Mark Hand of Godbeer, which isn't the worst nickname, but, Justin Ledet is a really, really good boxer. He's a boxer by trade who admits he fights MMA for money. He is just a beautiful, what we call a check left hook, which meaning you're backing up as a right-handed fighter. As your opponent comes into you, you throw a left hook at him. Oscar De La Hoya was a master of it in his prime. He was great at it. And he clipped Godbeer with this. But then he actually shot in, took him down, took his back, got the tap. It was, second time, Ledet is, at heavyweight or light heavyweight. He kind of goes back and forth. I was impressed by what he did there. I didn't know if he had those skills. He hasn't fought anybody really all that great, but I think he's definitely earned the right to step up in competition. And the other one was Kevin Lee defeating Magomedov Mustafayev. Kevin Lee just was fucking outstanding. Magomed, or who I called Mustafa, because I'm not going to write that fucking Russian shit. Lee just, on the feet, he was getting hit a couple times, but given that Mustafa was a Dagestani fighter, you expect to have some good wrestling. Kevin Lee took him down. And it wasn't just like he worked for it. He took him down the way that Matt Hughes would take down people back in the day. Where it's just like, a real wrestler versus somebody that can't wrestle. And Lee choked him out in the second round with a rear naked choke. And then after the fight, he cut a fantastic, fantastic promo. Just swearing up a storm saying, fuck everybody, fuck off. Fuck you, Ireland. I will fucking rape Conor McGregor. I will own this division. I am the best wrestler. I came out here. I did not want to beat Mustafa. I wanted to prove that I could out-wrestle him, and I did it. I am the man. I am great. Worship me. He was really, fired up and angry about shit. So he was the guy that left besides Musashi and Horiguchi. He definitely left, I think, the biggest impression in my mind.
Then we had UFC Fight Night 100, which was on FS1 also last Saturday from Sao Paulo, Brazil. Overall impression of this one? Should I go back and watch this? Should anyone ever go back and watch this?
Let me look at my notes here, aka my random thoughts as I'm going through things. I don't recall it being a bad show. Justin Scoggins lost to Pedro Munhoz, who got tapped out with the guillotine in the second round. kind of, I mean, Scoggins is not a bad fighter, so this is a big win for Munoz. It was a pretty good fight. There were a couple bad fights here and there, but Johnny Eduardo defeated Manny Gambirian. Not only defeated him, but the Armenian has retired. So let's all praise and worship and thank the Lord for another Armenian not having a job. That's always good stuff. Cesar Fajea Mutante tapped out Jake Hermanson with an arm triangle in the second round. A very smart fight from Mutante, who we had previously seen fight at middle. He actually been at middleweight and welterweight. He was back up at middleweight. He was all gassed up, you know, Vitor Belfort prospect. These things happen that way. I don't know how that works. I like the way Sergio Moraes fought Zach Otto, just because he's got such slick jiu-jitsu, but it wasn't really an entertaining fight or anything like that. Same with the Talisaitis, Christoph Jaco when Jaco won. Claudia Gadelia's fight sucked. Thomas Almeida looked really good, just blitzing Albert Morales, and Ryan Bader ground and pounded on Rogério Nogueira. He controlled the whole fight. He won the whole fight. He finished him with a ground and pound on the third round. It was like a combination of Ryan Bader being good and Little Nog just being, he's like almost 40. And as I get older, some part of me is like, oh, that's not that old. I was like, yes, it is. I'm 33 and that feels old to be fighting. So, like, and I haven't had decades and decades of abuse like the Nogueira brothers have. So it was kind of like a, yes, Bader improved a lot. I enjoyed seeing him do what he did. He looked good and he did his job. You know, there's something to be said where sometimes guys win and people want to be like, well, you know, the other guy wasn't that good or he's kind of old, but at least he went out there and he did what he was supposed to do, which is he beat the man and he beat him easily. And there's something, I really think there's something to be said for that, because I've seen a lot of guys who are put in easy win positions and they kind of, yeah, they win, but they don't look impressive or anything like that. I don't want to say Bader looked impressive, but at the same time, he didn't look unimpressive and he did his job. So good for Ryan Bader.
Yeah, he's reportedly a free agent at this point too. So he took the gamble and won, which is good for him. Obviously, you see him sticking around the UFC?
No idea. I mean, I think it really comes down to what he wants to do. If I'm the UFC,
you know what? It really comes down to what Bellator wants to do. You know what I mean? Well, the question is, how much money are they going to offer him?
I think
does UFC want to match it? That's always the question with this free agency stuff.
Well, that's true, but I also think there's something to be said for you kind of roll the dice. If you go to Bellator, you're going to get more guaranteed money, no doubt. They will offer Brian Bader, I'm sure they'll offer him more guaranteed money than he'll get in UFC. But they cannot offer him the chance of more money. Because there's no way the Bellator will ever offer Ryan Bader the possibility of a title fight in the UFC. And, you know, realistically, after next month's Cormier and Johnson fight, Ryan Bader may be the guy. You know, if Cormier wins, which I expect him to do, he might want to fight pretty quick. You know, he might not want to wait around until maybe July for John Jones. And Ryan Bader is probably the guy for him to fight. So Bader kind of has to weigh those options. Go to Bellator, you'll probably get a little higher guarantee, but a much lower Bellator has a higher floor, but a lower ceiling. And
right.
Like Bader's shown the ability to bet on himself, and a couple guys have, by going to free agency and winning their fights all the way through. So maybe he bets on himself and thinks, you know, maybe I can go somewhere here in the UFC. That said, it's a really weird it's a new world out there. We don't know exactly how everything works in the UFC right now. With Dana, Joe Silva, and the Fertitta, you kind of had something of an idea. Maybe the fighters didn't know, but I think any intelligent manager could kind of judge the landscape. But with WME, I don't know exactly how they think. I think they're kind of hands off, but, you know, maybe they're not. Maybe they look and they're like,
it's Ryan Bader. Like, we can't have him fight for the title. Like, this is shit. Like, find somebody else. He's boring. He's gonna get killed by Cormier or well, and obviously Rumble Johnson. So, you also have to kind of judge, you know, the personal thing. How old is Ryan Bader? What's his family life like? What's his financial stability like? What's he looking at for the next couple of years? And we've talked about it in the past. I think there's great value if you're really good going to Bellator, getting a couple of wins, being the champion, coming back. That said, Ben Henderson probably thought that, and it obviously backfired on him.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows how he would have done in the UFC, too. Maybe he would have lost three straight in the UFC. I mean, it's hard to say.
True, but I think even if you lose, like, three straight in UFC, if you're a big enough name, Bellator will probably sign you. You may not get as much money up front, but you probably have a job or a home, at least, on some level.
That's true.
And if you can go to Bellator, and, yeah, maybe your downside guarantee is a lot less, but if you win a couple fights in Bellator, you've reestablished yourself, and maybe Bellator pays a little bit more money to keep one of, quote-unquote, their guys in the fold.
Sure. Did you see the Courtney Casey Gadela phantom head kick thing?
Yes,
on
I did.
That show?
Yeah.
What did you it didn't look like it connected to me. You think she was playing it up like, you know, like a soccer player? What do you think was going on there?
No, if it was a soccer player, she would have pretended to be dead. I say this as someone who's a huge football fan. Go Liverpool. I mean, you know what? In that situation, when it's that close, to me, the benefit of the doubt goes to the chick getting kicked in the head.
Sure.
If she feels like she got kicked in the head, she reacted like she got kicked in the head, and in true Brazilian fashion, the commission came out afterwards, oh, no, nothing happened. Like, they did that with two fights. There was a fight earlier where a Brazilian guy got an accidental headbutt. It wasn't called. They got finished directly after it, which the commission overturned the win and made it a no contest, which actually I don't think is the worst decision a commission can make, but still, I do not trust the Brazilian commissions at all. I think they are basically inherently corrupt at this point. I think that Brazilians are, people think, Americans are all proud of ourselves and all this shit. We're really not. We're more proud of ourselves than, like, maybe, I don't know, Germany is. That's because we haven't committed any genocide this century, last century. But, you know, like, the Brazilians are hyper, hyper nationalistic, particularly with sports. They're almost kind of like the Soviet Union when it comes to sports, and that they'll just do whatever it takes to get shit. And we've seen with, you know, Jose Aldo getting advanced, you know, they threw out the piss test with Jose Aldo. That was bullshit. And there's just so many weird things. And I think, I can't remember which fighter it was from this car, but he basically said, like, any American going to fight down there in Brazil, you basically have to get a finish or you're going to lose. And whether true or not, once fighters start thinking that way, it speaks volumes. And again, this fucking Brazil leading up to the Olympics was unaccredited by the Olympic, WADA for not having good enough facilities. Oh, they magically had good enough testing facilities after a couple weeks later, which probably meant a bribe or something like that. But I think Courtney Casey got kicked in the head. You know what? If she didn't get kicked in the head, sorry, tough shit. You kick at somebody's fucking head when they're on the ground. You don't get to be like, oh, well, they're faking it. You're fucking, the best case scenario is a Gadelha missed by like a millimeter. Fuck you.
Right.
Like, you threw a fucking kick at a downed opponent's skull.
Right.
I'm going to give her the benefit of the doubt over you. And
sure.
So what? I don't even think Gadelha lost a point from it.
She didn't. They didn't deduct a point.
So it just shows like, it was stupid. Gadelha got the win. She should have got the win. She was a better fighter overall. But still, Courtney Casey, I think she got kicked in the head. I really do.
Yeah, I mean, it was super close. I don't even if she didn't get kicked in the head, I don't even care if she acted like she did. you know what? She's trying to win the fight, and you stall a couple minutes, you get the – granted, it's basically cheating if she didn't get kicked. But at the same time, it's like – happens in sports all the time. NBA players flop. Soccer players fall and roll around on the turf all the time. I don't want to say it's a tried and true tradition in sports, but to a certain degree, you try and get an advantage where you can. You're in the heat of the moment, and – you fall down and like act like you got hurt. You've seen it a billion times. Granted, you don't see it in MMA that often, but you know what? Sometimes there's questionable low blows. Like, was that really a low blow? Is he just trying to stall? Was that really a bad eye poke? You know, we've seen that over the years. So, I mean, I don't have a huge issue with it either way, whether she got hit or didn't. There's just a lot of talk about it in the last couple of days. It's probably the one thing Courtney Casey will be remembered for probably is that phantom head kick.
And you know what? Also, if you don't want somebody to like fake being phantom head kicked, don't fucking kick at their head when they're on the ground. And also,
absolutely.
And you know what? I've seen so much of this over the years. Not only have I seen it, I have personally experienced it in jiu-jitsu without striking, where something looks innocuous and it's far worse. Like,
right. We've
seen like groin shots where like it barely grazed and the guy looks like he's in pain. Not every, you know, shot to the nuts is the same. Sometimes you get kicked, but like there's, you know, a grazing shot can actually do more damage because it moves the cup and clips your nuts and stuff like that. Like the worst injury I ever had in jiu-jitsu was I popped my shoulder out, and it was a guy just did a very basic sweep. I've been swept that way literally 1,000 times in my life, and my shoulder just came out. Complete fluke. The guy did nothing illegal, nothing dirty, just completely okay, and yet my shoulder just popped out. It hasn't popped out ever since, but it's just weird shit happens, and sometimes you kick at a person's head, maybe you only clip them the toes, but maybe it hits them just right on the temple, and it's just enough to throw up their, you know, their balance or whatever it may be, or that grazing eye poke. You know, a grazing eye poke may be even worse than a full-on eye poke, because a full-on eye poke may hit, you know, a certain part of the eye, and a grazing eye poke just kind of scrapes the cornea. And, you know, these things are so, they're so personal. And,
right. You
know, we want to only penalize the things that look like, oh, yeah, I just, you know, went out there, fucking told a... One, two, hike, and just kicked him in the nuts like a punter would or something like that. But, you know, a lot of that doesn't work that way. You know, MMA, it is a game of inches. It's not a game of inches when it comes to some of this stuff. It's a game of millimeters. You punch a guy in the face, and if you hit him, you know, right in the temple, maybe he gets a little wobbled. A little bit lower, maybe he just eats it. Maybe you hit him a little bit right behind the ear, and he goes down. You hit him right in the chin, he goes out. It's such a unique sport that way that, you know, I mean, I haven't seen Casey ever fake shit before. And
true.
And again, you don't get any sympathy from me, Gedalia. You kicked at her head when she was on the ground, and I don't know why she did it. There wasn't like Casey was barely like doing the bullshit 3-point stance game or anything. Like she was clearly on the ground, and you kicked right at her head. You didn't kick at her body and she moved. You kicked it where it hit. Was at the top of the head, meaning you aimed for the head. So if she was hurt, fuck you. You fucking tried to commit a foul. Whether you did or not, you tried to do it.
There's one fight we'd be remiss in not talking about. Did you get to see that shoot fight between Brock Lesnar and Goldberg on Sunday night?
Actually, I did, because it was broadcast everywhere, yeah.
Any thoughts?
I mean, I don't really care. I think that was kind of a – look at this way. We're an MMA show. We don't do a lot of pro wrestling shit. And we're talking about it. And it was shocking. It was surprising. It made Goldberg look like an absolute badass. I know some people are like, well, long-term, blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, anything involving Brock Lesnar is not a long-term solution.
Right.
And the great thing about Brock is that Brock Lesnar is almost bulletproof because he can just go out there and grabs, I don't know, Seth Rollins or Dean Ambrose and give him 20 German suplexes and everybody's like, okay, yep, we believe it. He's back right. to being this, you know, real life badass. And, I mean, I don't know. I heard some things in kind of the ether floating around about one of them wasn't fully fit to go very long. The other one's injured. Brock wanted to do a longer program, all kinds of stuff, whatever. You know what? If you're going to watch Bill Goldberg, I wouldn't want to watch these two do. All I want to watch is either Brock throw Goldberg around, suplex him and beat his ass, or Goldberg do exactly what he did. And
right.
that's it. I don't give a shit beyond that. The crowd had that kind of visceral reaction that pro wrestling never gets. Like they show some of the faces in the crowd. It'll remind me exactly that black dude who has bug eyes when Brock pinned The Undertaker. Like, what the fuck just happened? Holy shit. Like, there were people in the crowd genuinely shocked by what they saw, and that never happens in pro wrestling. And I think it's a good thing when you can deliver that kind of emotion.
Absolutely. Yeah, it got people talking. It's a good thing. While we're talking pro wrestling, we should probably mention – on Monday, on the old MMA hour there with Ariel Helwani, CM Punk claimed that he has been talking with Dana White and expects that he will fight again in the UFC. Does this make sense?
Well, I haven't been contacted about being an opponent, so no, it does not make sense.
Does it make sense with the new owners, maybe?
I was just going to say, with the new owners, maybe it does. Maybe the new owners don't... It's weird... It's so weird because Dana is such a strong personality that I can't see him just giving in to whatever WME wants. Like, Dana seems to be the kind of guy to be like, you know what? Fuck you. I don't need this shit. Like, I got enough money. I'm not going to just do things for the sake of doing them. I'm kind of torn on it.
Do you think, like, he can draw again, though? Like, do you think it was, like, a one-shot deal and nobody will buy it again? Or do you think people will be forgiving of it and they could, you know, build it up as his first fight? The guy he fought was better than we thought, and he's better now, and do another reality show based on it and build him up again? Or is it just people saw through it and think it's a joke? Or are there enough people who don't really know MMA, the casual fan, who are like, oh, yeah, he got his ass kicked, but I've seen a bunch of people get their ass kicked. Eddie Alvarez got his ass kicked.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think it's the latter. I think there's – so, again, the big advantage the UFC has over WWE is not only do they not have weekly television that they have to fulfill – but they don't even have monthly television. Like, the guys that appear every month, they appear three, unless you're Dom Cerrone, maybe three times a year, maybe. Right. And so it's so easy to kind of like, oh, yeah, I know he lost, and now, oh, yeah. You kind of have, like, a vague memory. But as time goes on, your memories fade and just very basic elements remain. You're like, yeah, he lost, and he didn't look good, but you don't think about it a lot. And like, for a casual fan, especially given that I don't think that they're ever going to rely on him to be the draw on a pay-per-view, he adds some depth. And until he probably loses several times over, where it's just like, come on, this is really, really pathetic. You know, particularly if Mickey Gall does well against Sage Northcutt, I definitely think that, you know, the better Mickey Gall does, the better CM Punk's drawing power becomes. And, you know.
That's true.
And so, obviously CM Punk should not be in the UFC. I say this in all sincerity, I don't think he could beat me in a fight. Like, even right now, and I'm not even in shape. Like, I just went, I went 30 minutes the other day, and all I did was brown belts and purple belts, and nobody tapped me. I passed their guards a couple times. They passed my guard a couple times, but I held my own. Like, I was actually pretty fucking proud of myself because I've been, after my knee injury, trying to get back into it as best I can. I don't think CM Punk can actually beat me in a fight. And that's not bragging. Like, I'm not that great. I just don't think Punk is that good. I think people really overestimated what his base level was when he started training. He really started as a guy who had never thrown a punch and was a true white belt. You do not become a high-level professional fighter or even a professional fighter in 2 years doing that unless you have a Brock Lesnar-like background. And Punk obviously does not. But if the UFC wants to have him fight again, it's half what will he do for them, but there's also what would he do for Bellator. And I think that's a big consideration. And, I can't fault Punk for anything because, look, somebody wants you to fight, you want to fight. Would you rather fight in RFA or UFC? You always want to fight in the UFC. It's just...
Oh, yeah.
It's a bigger deal in the UFC. If you win, if he somehow pulls out a victory, yeah, you look great. He should be in RFA or, you know, Glory or whatever, Evolve, something that is on Fight Pass. But, and so it's kind of under UFC contract, but I don't know if that's something he's going to be amenable to. And so in that case, I don't know, maybe have a fight again and, you put it on the undercard, maybe put it on Fox Sports, Big Fox, or the main event of Fox Sports 1, something like that.
I could see him opening a pay-per-view again.
Yeah.
I don't know what he'll mean at the box office this time. Obviously, it's going to be diminishing returns the more he loses. But I bet there's 100,000 people out there still that would pay to see him fight. And it's like, why waste that money on Fox or Fox Sports 1? If he comes back, I bet you it'll be on pay-per-view. If I had to guess, just a hunch.
Oh, if I was them, I would put it on pay-per-view. I wouldn't even...
Right.
I would put him on pay-per-view until I thought there was nothing left. You know, as the old Bret Hart quote is, you know, treat him like circus animals. Get everything you can out of them and then cast them aside. That's the nature of the beast. And for everybody who thinks that's really awful for promoters to do it, remember, fighters will leave a promoter in a split second if they think they're going to get a better offer someplace else. That's just how life is. Nobody owes anybody shit when it comes to money. Business is business, and that's the great thing about businesses. They are unfeeling and unemotional. You will pay me X, you will pay me Y. Okay, I'll go with X because it's more. End of story. You don't have to involve your emotions. Say, yes, there's a little bit of loyalty and for some types of, like, you know, startup businesses and things like that. But for the most part, something established like the UFC, if they will pay Punk more than he'll get paid in Bellator, he fights there. If the UFC thinks that they can make more money off of him, then they could, you know, let him go to Bellator, they do it. It's just a, you know, it's a numbers game. And, I think that the UFC it straddles a very, very tenuous line because the more these fights they have, the more they lose credibility. But having said that, I thought that after Punk lost, I'm like, God, this looks bad for the UFC. This is shit. But you know what? No one's talked about it. No one said the UFC is less. The UFC just did Madison Square Garden, a huge pay-per-view, all these buys. They're going to do Rondo's back. Like, they can.
You know why, though? But do you know why part of the reason is? Look at their competition. It's like when you look at Bellator, and you look at Ryzen, and you look at World Series of Fighting, they could have Punk fight every other month, and they'd still have way more credibility than everybody else in the business, you know?
They would have more credibility for sure, but I don't think the UFC is in competition with anybody but themselves.
Sure.
In that, your average fan is not saying, well, UFC, this is embarrassing. This is not WWE and WCW in their heyday who are equals.
Right.
Bellator is so far under the radar to your average fan, the people that make up 1.5 million pay-per-view buys, it does not matter. What matters is making sure that your regular viewers and your casual fans who tune in every once in a while, and these are the people that watch Ronda, Connor, and then maybe Brock, and then kind of dips off, there is a degree of credibility to be had and, you know, just letting those people know, we take this seriously. What you're seeing is the best. And the UFC's, this is their great advantage over boxing, is that boxing, you know, people get excited about Andrei Korolev versus Sergey Korolev versus Andre Ward or whatever. You know, boxing has, Pacquiao versus Mayweather. It's like a once-in-a-generation fight. The UFC takes those types of once-in-a-generation fights and has them happen once a year. They don't protect anyone ever. The company right. is great at making sure that the best fight the best, sometimes flying in the face of what's good for business. There's a very strong chance that Khabib Nurmagomedov fights Conor McGregor. A lot stronger chance than you would ever see that kind of matchup happen in boxing. And mm-hmm. so the UFC has built so much goodwill over the years. And if Punk fights once or twice, I don't think anybody matters, especially given that they don't make him the main event. He's not even the semi-main event. He's three or four from the bottom. He's fighting, and they're putting him in there with guys who are not big names. You know, bless Mickey Gall, a fan of the show, but, you know, Mickey Gall is not some world beater or anything like that. And so it's not like they're doing, you know, Punk versus Fyodor where everybody's like, oh, wow, look at that. It's just pathetic. They just want to have a big headline. And, no, it's Punk versus a guy that people haven't heard of. And if he's kind of fighting people haven't heard of, it lends, in a weird way, credibility to what they're doing. But you can only do it so many times before, honestly, you know, you do it a couple times and both their credibilities drop off, but Punk's credibility drops off way quicker than the UFC's. Because all the UFC has to do is not book him. Punk doesn't have any other choice. His credibility depends 100% on his ability to perform. He has to eventually win a fight, or at the very least not lose in 55 seconds. The UFC can just say, we gave him a shot. We told everybody in advance it's a bit of a gamble. We're not going to, you know, it is a very unique circumstance. You know, I'm probably not going to see John Cena doing this shit, although that would be interesting. I'm now kind of thinking about John Cena doing MMA. He'd probably be a heavyweight, and, he'd probably be like a top 10 F pretty quickly. So, yeah, but, you know, whatever. I'm done.
Speaking of credibility, we had touched on this, I think, the last few weeks. The ongoing saga of Rashad Evans' medicals. Again, he's apparently had an issue with an MRI. He was pulled from UFC 205 by the New York State Athletic Commission, and then almost immediately rebooked for UFC 206 in Ontario, where he was going to fight Tim Kennedy again. The Ontario Commission apparently did not like Evans' medicals either, though. He's been pulled from UFC 206 as well. Evans says that he's healthy, it's not a big deal. And at the same time, Tim Kennedy is going out claiming that Evans was pulled because he has brain damage. No substitute has been found for Tim Kennedy. But to me, this is – I don't want to say it's a good sign because it's probably a bad sign for Evans – but at the same time, it's good to see the Ontario Commission looking into whatever the issue is and maybe protecting Evans from himself.
Yeah, it's anytime any commission says that a guy is not healthy enough to fight, I'm really glad to hear it. Because I know how awful it sounds, but commissions are just they're money grubbing bastards. Generally right. don't give a shit about fighter health. All they want to do is make money. They just want to get as much as they can from guys. They'll let weird things fly and so on and so forth. So for them to sacrifice whatever, how much money they might make off the fight, and for, you know, to stick it to the UFC and say we're not, you know, to endanger the quote-unquote relationship, that speaks volumes, I think, about what's going on. I've been thinking about this, and the only fighter I can think of, it kind of seems like a parallel to me, was Stefan Struve. And he had his heart issue. And everybody's right. like, okay, he's done. This is a big deal. And he eventually got it cleared. The difference is that Stefan Struve was like in his 20s, and Rashad's like in his mid to late 30s. And, you know, when it was New York, I thought, whatever. You know, New York's just the first time they're going to be super, super cautious. They don't want to risk it. Okay, I got it. Toronto, they don't give a shit. Like, they've been around. They fucked around with the scales, I think, with George St. Pierre and all that or whatever, as a Diaz fan would say.
Yes.
There is something odd going on. I feel for Rashad in that it's got to suck to in Rashad's heart, he probably thinks, I know I'm okay. I know right. I can do this. And I've got and I guarantee he has doctors of his own that says, no, you're fine. That's just I think that's just in there. But there are obviously other doctors look at it and say, this is not worth the risk. Do I think Rashad would die in a fight? No. I think the odds of anybody dying in a fight are slim and none, but it has happened. And realistically, anybody over the age of 35 in professional fighting should be held to really, really strict standards. Cause it's such a, this is a real brutal sport. I love this sport. I obsess about it. I obsess about it as much as anybody I've ever met could obsess about it. Most people love MMA look at me and go, what the fuck? Like, I'll go to the gym and I'll be rolling people and they'll be talking about hey, did you see that fight? And like, I thought, well, who fought? And I'd be like, what do you mean who fought? It was Nate Diaz and Conor McGregor. What the fuck do you mean who fought? Like, how do you not know this stuff? I have every moment of that fight memorized in my head. This is amazing. But at the same time, don't die. I know it sounds really simple, but it's just fighting. It's just a sport. And yeah. I think Rashad has kids and a wife, I'm guessing. He's not somebody like me. Somebody like me, whatever. I can go out and fucking do whatever I want. If I died tomorrow, my mom would be sad. My brother would be sad. A couple of friends would be sad. But I'm not, there's nobody that depends on me. And when you have people that depend on you, I know people are like, oh, this is the only way to make money. It's not. There's so many things to do out in the world. And trust me.
Most people don't make money that way.
Yeah, exactly.
What percentage of the population earns their money cage fighting?
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? No one. Nobody.
And you know what? I say this as somebody that I'm kind of contemplating a career change, actually, joining my brother and doing what he does full time. And it's actually been a very, very mentally difficult thing for me because my dad was a lawyer. I've been a lawyer. I'm 33. I started law school when I was 24. So that's 9 years of my life at minimum have been dedicated to the pursuit of something. I graduated. I practiced law. I'm good at it, but I'm kind of just fed up with the business. But it's tough for me because you build your identity around what you do. It's, I think, especially prevalent amongst men. Women don't seem to have their self-worth, their self-identity as involved in what they do, but with a man, the first question if you meet a guy you've never met, you go, so what do you do for a living? It's the first question we ask. Not, hey, what's your favorite hobby? Or what do you think about this? Or what's your favorite color? It's like, hey, what do you do for a living? And you've been, I manage restaurants. I'm a lawyer. I'm a doctor. As men, we're kind of programmed, whether by society or nature, to define ourselves by what we do. And if you've been a fighter for a long time, or not even a fighter, but an athlete, to let that go, you've seen so many athletes in so many sports, guys who are at a higher level than anybody in MMA's ever been. I mean, Michael Jordan couldn't let it go. The dude won 6 fucking NBA championships, every MVP he won, universally regarded as the greatest basketball player ever, and he still went and played for the Wizards because he just wanted to play. He couldn't give it up. You even hear the stories now, when he talks about it, and people are like, yeah, Jordan will go down there with the young kids, and he'll try it and work and try to bust their balls, and he still, some part of him thinks he can do it. So I think it's really tough for men to give up that kind of identity they've built. And, it sucks, especially when you're in a combat sport. And in addition to all of those issues, you also have probably, whether you have CTE or whether it's a severe case, a mild case, just symptoms of it, you've been punched in the head a lot. You put whatever chemicals in your body over the years. I think it's, you know, it's so tough for these guys to just say, I can't do it, even though, you know, you'll be in the gym and you'll have those days. And I've had those. Everybody who's ever been in the gym has the days where some days you just, you're a fucking god. Like, there are days I've walked in the gym. I was like, the other day, I was like, I'm walking through, like I said, purple belts, brown belts. I'm like, holy shit, I'm really fucking good at this. And then I'll meet like a white belt who's got a lot, who's bigger and with good wrestling. I'm like, fuck, I'm having trouble with this guy. Like those, but as an athlete, you're trained to ignore the negative and to remember your positives, to focus on all that shit. And so I think it's really difficult for someone like Rashad to maybe accept and say, I can't do this at that level anymore, and to let it go. Because think about it. I mean, it's not like he's fighting nobody. He's scheduled to fight Tim Kennedy. That's a really good fighter. It's not like he's out there getting blitzed. He hasn't lost a fight where you go, oh, shit, he got beat by some newcomer coming in the UFC. So I feel for him, but with multiple commissions now saying, dude, you're not healthy. You can't do this. I hope he resumes his job at Fox Sports 1 and does some commentary that way. I don't know if he ever saw him as particularly good or great, but for his mental health, his long-term physical health, I hope he does it.
Yeah, you never want anybody to suffer long-term damage. The thing that's weird about it is it still hasn't really been revealed what the issue is. I mean, obviously you've got Tim Kennedy spouting off saying it's brain damage, but Evans hasn't really been clear on what the issue is, and the commissions haven't really said because it's a medical issue. They can't really go into detail. So it's weird. It'll be interesting to see how it all pans out. If, you know what, if it turns out he's got a serious issue and first show in New York, this new commission caught it, good for them.
Yeah,
you know?
And there was actually one other case. I thought Seth is true, but there's actually a better case. Which
Dan Hardy?
No, which is Tiago Alves. When he fought, Tiago Alves had a fight coming at one point. He scheduled a fight in New Jersey, and they found like a brain lesion or some weird shit on his brain. And everybody's like, "Oh, this could be the end." But he got it taken care of, and he's since gone on to miss weight several times. So there's hope for you, Rashad.
Speaking of the New York State Athletic Commission. Obviously, it's the newest of all the athletic commissions in the United States. So they had the issue with Rashad, obviously. They pulled him. But recently, they suspended Yoel Romero for 60 days for his post-fight celebration after beating Chris Weidman. If you remember, this was the fight where he jumped the cage and did his weird military march around the cage and saluted people and got booed and hissed at. But they also hit Kelvin Gastelum and Tiago Alves with suspensions for missing weight prior to the show, which is very unusual for state athletic commissions to do. I can't really remember a time a guy got suspended for missing weight. Gastelum has actually been banned for 6 months and is currently appealing after he didn't show up to the weigh-ins at all. He didn't just miss weight. He didn't even show up and weigh in at all. And Alves was suspended for 3 months after missing by 6.6 pounds, which is odd. They suspended him because they let him fight on the show the next day. So this is kind of a weird territory New York's going into. To me, it looks like they're following the letter of the law to the T. They're dotting their I's and these are our rules. These are the bylaws. We're going to follow them. We don't care what the precedent was before in, you know, California, Nevada, Texas, wherever it might be. They're seeming to, I don't want to say put their money where their mouth is because they weren't like bragging that they were going to do this, but it's interesting and a departure from the norm.
Yeah, I mean, Yoel Romero's thing doesn't matter. He wasn't going to fight in the next 60 days anyways, and they could say whatever and send a message.
But to me, that it's just interesting because there's so many instances where guys jump out of the cage.
Oh, and Jose Aldo ran into the crowd, and he's fine.
Yeah.
I mean, what the fuck? As far as the missing weight thing, that is very odd. That Weidman got longer than Alves – okay, you're saying, well, Elvis tried to wade in and missed Weidman. I'm sorry, not Weidman.
Gastelum.
Gastelum didn't even try, so you're going to give him a little bit longer. Maybe I kind of understand that, but if there's no real justification for suspending a guy for missing weight when you let him fight.
Right.
It's if he wasn't following the rules, I get it. You know, if you want to be real sticklers and say, hey, we're fucking New York City, we can do whatever we want, we got the biggest dick in the country, we're going to do, you know, you're going to follow our law now, so be it. But I don't like saying, well, you can fight, but then you're going to be suspended. Well,
yeah.
Like, either he's okay to fight or he's not. And everybody in the world knows what Jim Miller did. Jim Miller just said, oh, fuck, I'm just eat a bunch of shit, put a bunch of water in my body so I can be within 5 pounds so we can fight. And
well, that was another one of those rules that wasn't necessarily the case in other states, too. Because, I mean, technically, like, if you're fighting at – if it's lightweight, you can weigh anywhere from one, I guess, technically, I want to say 146 all the way up to 156 in theory. But then they've got this 5 pound difference rule. So it's odd. And I still haven't figured out how they manage like a heavyweight fight where one guy could weigh 220 and one guy could weigh 265.
Yeah.
Because I'm guessing it's based on percentages. But the weirdest part of this whole thing is it doesn't sound like the UFC knew about a lot of this. It didn't sound like the fighters knew about it. Didn't sound like any MMA reporters knew about it. Like, when all these suspensions are coming out, everybody's like, I had no idea. It's kind of sad in a way, I guess, but.
It's definitely odd. I don't want to say it's unprecedented because there have been times, and I can't remember what, it was a middleweight fight where they were, an athletic commission, and I feel like it was in Canada, were concerned about a weight discrepancy. And it wasn't like one guy missed weight so much, it was going to be like a guy at 186 versus somebody at 178. And they were, like, worried this is too much of a weight difference. And I remember thinking, but that's – what the fuck's the point of having weight classes? If you have to basically only weigh within 3 pounds or whatever of the limit, no. That's a great thing about MMA, and I think it's one of the things that's separated it from boxing is that we don't go every 3 pounds for a new weight class. We go every 10 right. or 15 or 20, which I actually think it should really be every 10 pounds is – I think 10 pounds is kind of when frames tend to change. But, if Thiago Alves should be suspended for missing weight, then he shouldn't be fighting. It's really, to me, as simple as that. If you think it's okay for Thiago Alves to go out there and, in theory, possibly kick Jim Miller in the head and knock him unconscious, though you're going to then suspend him after that? You're gonna let Jim Miller go out there and get his head kicked in, suffer possibly irreparable brain damage, and then you're 3 months. Either you can fight or you can't fight. And if they wanted to say you missed by too much weight, you can't fight, it's fine. You be consistent, I can understand the logic. But to say you missed by a lot of weight, you can still fight, but then after you fight, you can't fight anymore. That it makes – it's just weird. It's stupid, and I mean there's an issue of notice. That's kind of an issue that's going on. I think that's actually a big problem USADA's having right now because you're seeing fighters get weird fucking suspensions. Like nobody's getting 2 years. Michi's getting 18 months. Somebody else is getting 9 months. And, oh, you disclosed it, but you didn't disclose it, or you disclosed it, but it was still bad, and like – again, I know it's part of it's my wiring as a trained, brilliant attorney, but stop laughing every, damn it, don't laugh at me.
Well, you were just saying you were looking to get out of the business and do something else.
Because I hate lawyers, but I love the law. But, you know, to me.
There's some irony there.
Yeah, well, yeah. To me, you say what the rules are in advance, and that's it. Like, I actually thought about this the other day. I had this rant because I do rants in my head a lot. Shocking. And the great thing about sports is that they are a pure meritocracy. When you play baseball, the rules are the same for both sides. Everybody gets 3 strikes, 4 balls. That's it. 9 innings, pitcher, catcher, the positions are the same. It's even. It's an even income. What happens on for the output depends on who's better. So you don't have to worry about somebody favoring someone. It's not like, actually, sadly, the law. It's not like politics where, that guy donated a lot of money to my campaign, so maybe I'll look the other way on his infractions. Like, sports are pure, and that's why I think so many people like sports. Like, take soccer. All you have is 2 nets and a ball. Kick the ball in the net. That's it. It's very simple. Hockey, put the puck in the net. Basketball, put the ball in the hoop. It's very simple. And everybody has to play by the same rules. And anytime we see in sports people not having to play by the same rules, it discredits the sport. When we see main event fighters getting different treatment, when we see guys getting weird suspensions based on, oh, I disclosed this supplement but not that supplement, or so on and so forth. To me, it's like you've got to be consistent. I think consistency is so, so important for sports because societally, we look at sports for that consistency. We want that honesty. We want to know that there's something in life that's fair because life is not fair. You know, 2 people go to work and they work really hard, but one of them kisses the boss's ass and gets a promotion. We hate it. We hate seeing that shit. We hate seeing somebody that's not qualified advance and then become president of the United States eventually. Ooh, topical. But, you know, Donald Trump doesn't win in sports. Hillary Clinton doesn't win in sports. The guy who's better wins. And that's what we like about sports. We know that Babe Ruth was great because he hit all those home runs. He didn't fake those home runs. Nobody grooved him a fastball. Nobody was paid off as far as we know, to throw in fastballs and things like that. And that's why we recoil when, like, Barry Bonds, innocent until proven guilty as a Giants fan, hits all of his home runs because we're like, oh, he's on steroids and he cheated. And we think, yeah, that's not the same. He beat the record, but he didn't really beat the record. The record is who can do this without steroids. And
right,
that's the greatness of athletics and sports. Like, who's the fastest man? Well, that's not the guy on fucking methamphetamines and anabolic steroids. It's a dude that's, you know, some fucking Kenyan dude or whatever running or some shit like that. And that's what's great about sports. And I think that these athletic commissions and USADA with their awkward different penalties, depending on, I guess, how much you prostrate yourself in front of the commission, it's bullshit. You know, it's like when Nate Diaz and Conor McGregor, Nate Diaz started throwing a water bottle. He threw the first water bottle, but one of them got a different amount of penalty than the other. That doesn't make any sense at all. It's irrational, and it undermines the credibility of the athletic commissions, and over time, that undermines credibility of the sporting event itself. I'm done ranting.
Okay. No, I get what you're saying. It's to me the issue with USADA is this. It's still new, and to say the consistency factor is hard to determine when there's only been so many violations, and so many of them can be unique depending on the drug. Is it whatever, a prohibited substance? Is it this 1-year thing? Is it a 2-year thing? Is it anabolic? So, I mean, on the surface, it can look like it's inconsistent and unfair, but at the same time, they're still working out the kinks. This is a sport that hasn't had year-round testing ever, and they're catching more guys, and hopefully they work out the penalties and the punishments and they get some consistency, but it's still so new. And it's like, this guy took something and the substance wasn't listed on the package and he didn't realize it. Okay. What are we going to do in this situation? He admitted it. He wrote it down. Should it be 2 years or should we cut him a little slack?
maybe you do cut them a little slack, and if there's a similar situation in the future, you do the same thing. But until there's enough of these issues coming up and happening consistently, it's hard to judge them because it's all still so new.
I know what you're saying, and it's not necessarily wrong, except for...
Thanks.
Well, except for the fact that... I was going to say Chris Nowitzki, the guy running UFC's USADA program. This is his, that's his job, and he's done this before.
Jeff Nowitzki. Right?
There we go, Jeff Nowitzki. Yeah, he's done this before with other sports, and as somebody who has personally followed the sport for literally the majority of my life. Yes, I have a law background, but guess what? There's plenty of fucking lawyers out there they can consult, or plenty of philosophers. It's almost a philosophical question: when do you apply guilt to somebody for their actions? These aren't questions that were unforeseeable. These are very, very obvious defenses. It was a tainted supplement. Well, what are we going to do when a fighter says it's a tainted supplement?
Right, but there's different levels of that. Do you know what I mean? Well, you test the supplement, and it is the stuff that they said in it, then it's like, okay, it's in there. What was it on the label? There's different levels, and maybe the punishment should vary. Should Machida automatically get 2 years?
No,
he should not. Okay.
Here's the thing. It's a legal thing, but... to be criminally guilty of something, you need what we call actus rea and mens rea. Actus rea means is the action. You physically committed the act. Mens rea is your state of mind while committing the act. And the classic example is you and I sit down on a park bench. We have identical briefcases. We put them down. I stand up. I pick up your briefcase, and I walk away. I don't mean to take your briefcase. I did not commit theft. Because I did not mean to commit theft. I did not know that was your briefcase. So I cannot be guilty of doing something that I did not mean to do. We punish people criminally. And in the case of USADA and all this, it's kind of it should be more of a criminal approach to things. We punish people for their state of mind at the time that they committed an action. So if you meant to cheat, but you didn't actually cheat, you didn't cheat. So there's no crime committed. And if you cheated, but you can prove that you honestly did not mean to cheat, there's no crime committed. It's when you mean to cheat and you do cheat, then you get punished. And what USADA is doing is, well, okay, I know you didn't mean to cheat, but you still cheated. So we're going to give you a little bit lesser. No. Unless you can prove somebody...
Yeah, but isn't that just how life works, though? It's like, if you get pulled over for speeding, and you say, oh, I honestly didn't see the speed limit sign, you're still kind of liable, and you can still get a ticket.
Well, those are actually what we call strict liability laws. There are laws that we have decided, it doesn't matter if you meant to do it or not, we're going to find you guilty. I don't like those types of laws, but they apply, and they tend to apply for petty offenses like speeding, but nobody would ever say picking up the briefcase thing. Why should I be guilty? I just picked up a briefcase, a complete accident. I just took a supplement and the supplement.
Right. Label- but there's not, with the briefcase thing, there's nothing written anywhere. I mean,
but the supplements,
there's no rule that says you can't accidentally pick up a briefcase. There are rules on what is in your system.
Exactly.
As far as drugs.
Now, if we want to apply a strict liability, that is, it does not matter what your mental intention was. The fact that you have it in your system means you are guilty. Fine. I will accept that. That means tainted supplements, tainted meat, none of it is the defense. We will give no defense. We will give no mitigating circumstances to what you have done. If we want to,
because at least that's consistent.
Exactly.
I'm not defending that.
No, you're fine.
That
you're fine.
Take on it. It's just, I don't know.
It's
hard because you get into this gray area where you're trying to determine what someone's intent was.
Exactly.
But when you do that, there's going to be inconsistencies, and that's just part of life.
Yeah,
I mean,
there absolutely will be, and I think it's actually important for USADA to give written opinions about why they're doing things. The same way that the Supreme Court gives you a written opinion about why you have a Miranda right, why the Defense of Marriage Act should be rejected, and so on and so forth. It's not just the conclusion you reach, it is the logic leading up to it. Mm-hmm. And that's why I have a lot of problem with a lot of judges, because they may reach, I always use gay marriage. I thought that they reached the correct conclusion with faulty logic, and I didn't like it. It bothered me because I thought that does not add up. Your A plus B does not equal C. It equals D, but you're saying it's equaling C. If you're taking, and we've seen this in multiple things with the supplements, some guys are like showing them going, look, the fucking package itself, the label itself in the supplement does not list this ingredient. And then they say, well, yeah, but if you went on the website and did some more research, then you would find it. So they give them 3 or 6 months. But when the cheat is like, well, the supplement's listed on the package, but you didn't actually recognize that it was an illegal supplement, so we give you 18 instead of 24. But so what you're really telling people is, if you could have known, it's a recklessness versus a negligence argument on their part. And for those who don't know, recklessness is you knew there was a danger and you proceeded anyway. And so therefore you're responsible. Think of it as you're going to do a tightrope walk and you're going to walk across two buildings. You know there's a possibility you're going to fall, but you say, fuck it, I'm going to do it anyways. You know there's a danger, but you proceed anyways. It's not the same as saying I want to actually hurt someone. But it's you are aware there's a chance you could definitely hurt someone, as opposed to negligence, which is you should have known, but you did not know. And therefore, you are less culpable than if you did know and proceeded, and you're less culpable than if you didn't know and you intended to harm someone. There's, you know, three layers there. And if that's what USADA and all of them want to do as far as punishing people, so be it. But they need to make that clear. And it needs to be written out. And again, this isn't easy shit. There's a reason why this is all what we call common law. And it goes back to roughly, I mean, you can trace it back to the Magna Carta in your 10,000, 1,000, whatever. But it kind of goes back to Blackstone, who wrote a lot of this shit in the 1600s. You know, this stuff is not easy. There's, you know, judges from, like, my favorite judge, Learned Hand, in the 1920s is writing about very, very difficult, complicated questions like this, and they have still not been resolved. There's always going to be questions about this. And I don't fault USADA for having it, for not having all the answers to the questions. I fault them for not admitting that they don't have all the answers to the questions, and for refusing to basically write out and tell people why they did something. Why is this guy guilty? Why is that guy not as guilty? Let people know. Otherwise, it's a kangaroo court and you're just making shit up as you go along. And then you become Pat Lundvall, who says Nick Diaz should be suspended for fucking life because he smoked weed. She did that from a purely, you know, authoritarian perspective. She didn't like the way she was being respected, so she punished somebody. She had no logical or reasonable basis for doing what she did, but she fucking did it anyways. And that's an inappropriate application of punishment and law to an individual. And I'll probably shut the fuck up now about law stuff.
Okay. We'll move along because we're running long here. One fight announcement we should talk about this week. BJ Penn has a fight lined up again, everybody. He's scheduled to fight Yair Rodriguez on UFC Fight Night on January 15th in Phoenix.
Phoenix, yeah.
Yeah. I don't even know what to make of this fight. Rodriguez, not a huge name yet, but kind of a younger, I think 24, up-and-coming featherweight. He's had a couple spectacular like knockout wins. I remember one head kick he had. But weird fight for BJ. Does this make sense? It's a main event of a fight night show. He was scheduled to fight Dennis Seaver on an undercard. Then he was going to fight Cole Miller at one point, I think. Then most recently it was the Philippines card with Ricardo Lamas. He got injured and was out of that. Now we've got this Rodriguez fight. Thoughts on that one?
You know, to BJ Penn's credit, I guess, he's not looking for easy fights. This is a very good fighter who's much younger and who doesn't have a ton of name value. He's not out there for a payday. He's out there to really, truly compete and prove himself at 145 pounds. I hope that he understands that you can't use an IV now because USADA will randomly decide if you cheated or not. The good news is Phoenix is a very cheap flight for most people. It's a good destination. It's a great place to be, and especially in January. It's a winnable fight for BJ. It's a winnable fight for BJ Penn.
You think?
Well,
you don't think he's going to get lit up standing?
And again, it's winnable in that if BJ Penn could perform like BJ Penn did, he can win. Otherwise, if he's just washed up, he's washed up. It doesn't matter. He's going to lose against pretty much anybody. But, just watch it. I was watching a whole bunch of BJ Penn stuff this past week because that's what I do. And just watching him, I'm like, fuck me. This guy's in his prime. I'm like, Khabib couldn't beat this guy. The way that he sprawled on Matt Hughes and Sean Sherk and St. Pierre, I'm like, this guy's he's a fucking god in the octagon. There's nobody, even today, nobody does what BJ did back then. But, Rodriguez will be faster. But, Yair is not a strong wrestler. He's a diverse striker, but he doesn't have a lot of power. BJ Penn may be able to take him down, and on the ground, Penn should have an advantage. It's it's not a gimme fight. And, if BJ Penn beats Yair Rodriguez, he's right there in the top 10 at featherweight, which, even if that's all he ever does, if that's his last fight, I think that's a hell of an accomplishment in your later part of your 30s to go out and drop a weight class and, be the dude is, because Rodriguez is not a joke. He had that main event there in Salt Lake City when all the Mormons were like, what the fuck are these brown people doing? And he won
the Caceres, right?
Exactly, yeah. And he won the fight easily, and it wasn't tough for him. It's a, again, credit to BJ for not either accepting or asking for an easy fight. Like, this is a real fight. This is not a gimme. Again, another difference. In boxing, a guy like BJ Penn would be given some joke guy like CM Punk or some shit like that. But in MMA, he gets a guy who's not that well known who could easily take his head off. So, hell, I mean, this is a damn good fight. I'm really looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think you're forgetting BJ's last 5 years, but I think you watched like the fights from 10 years ago and might be forgetting Frankie Edgar and Nick Diaz and Rory and Frankie again. But granted, some of those guys were bigger, but Frankie wasn't really. Hasn't won in a fight in 6 years, but
He should have beat John Fitch.
Yeah, it was a draw, right? That was a draw.
It was a draw, but I thought he had it won. But yeah, I know what you're saying. But Frankie's special and super quick. I mean, the guys were bigger. So I believe in BJ Penn, all right? That's all I
No,
have.
I
Dude, I would jump. I'm not a real excitable person, but if BJ like managed to submit Rodriguez or knock him out or whatever, I would jump out of my chair and applaud that man. But I'm skeptical, just like I am with Fedor and Mitrione. UFC Fight Night coming up on Saturday night this week, November 26th on FS1 from Melbourne, Australia. A lot of filler on this card if you look at the lineup, but a solid main event with two sort of, I mean, Brunson's in his early 30s, but two up-and-coming middleweights. Originally, the headliner for this was Luke Rockhold versus Jacare Souza, or Souza, depending on where you come from and how you like to pronounce that. But this moved up into the main event slot when Rockhold got injured. So two top 10 guys, both riding 5-fight win streaks, could kind of be one of the next names in the division, possibly Musasi's next fight too, whoever wins this one. Any thoughts on that fight or this card in general?
The card in general sucks. I looked at all up and down. I'm like, are you fucking kidding me? Like,
it's rough. A lot of filler.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, it's free fighting, so I'm not going to complain a lot. Without the main, if you had Jacare and Rockhold, this would be a good card to watch. Whitaker and Brunson is a main event. But really? I'm all in favor of, sometimes you have to, you have a loss leader. You got to, let a guy go out there who's not super known, but you put him in the main event a couple times. And people kind of get in their head, oh, this guy's been in the main event like three times. He might be important. Neither one of these guys are probably like that. If either one of them is, I think it's Brunson. I think he has a little bit more upside. Whitaker, to me, he's okay, but he isn't special or anything like that. Yeah. But as a card in general, I think Jake Matthews is kind of like a Aussie favorite fights. And Kyle Noak, who... Fuck me. I remember the first time I saw Kyle Noak fight in person. It was on the undercard of Phil Baroni versus Frank Shamrock in San Jose. And he's the same dude since then. And that was like 2007? It's like 9-10 years ago. Like, he's just there. Like, there's some fights that aren't... They're not bad or anything, but... And again, nobody has a fucking clue how a show will turn out. It doesn't matter who's really booked, because... Sometimes great shows happen and you go, huh, never saw that coming. And this very well may be that. And, I hope it is. They're not doing early weigh-ins for the first time in a while.
To me, that this show and the last two shows this weekend are the curse of doing those massive, UFC 200, UFC 205 type shows. 'Cause those cards are so loaded and you're looking forward to every fight. And then you've got like three shows in a row where you look at the card and you're like, you don't know half the guys. Half of the guys aren't like real elite top tier guys. They're low level UFC fighters. And there's a question of how much appetite you have for that. And everybody's got a different threshold, but it's another card where you're not jonesing for it coming off at 205. And part of the issue was 205 had all these great fights. If you had mixed and matched a couple of those shows a little bit, 205 probably would have drawn the same, and you would have had three cards that were a little more solid that might have had a little more talk and buzz. You didn't hear anything about these shows this past weekend.
Yeah, and they're lucky in that they were in Northern Ireland, which is a hot market, Brazil, which is a racist but hot market. I fucking hate the Brazilian crowds. And Australia, they're going to probably be more or less hot for whatever they see. But so it kind of gives a false impression of the depth of the cards. But yeah, exactly. Like, I actually think if you took like the past three cards and you combined them, you've been like, yeah, that's not a bad show. Like, you'd probably be able to do like a 10 deep card. You'd be like, that's pretty fucking good. But, yeah. As it stands, yeah, exactly. Maybe they could have taken one of the fights from UFC 205, and yeah, it fell through. But imagine if we had a card with Cerrone versus Gastelum and Evan versus Kennedy, and then a couple, Bader versus Nogueira. you would have had a really, really good, strong fight card, and I don't think it would have cost a single fucking buy. Granted, obviously, two of those fights fell through, but from a booking perspective, it would have worked fabulously.
Yeah, it seems like more and more that it's the main event and maybe the semi-main that are drawing. And it almost doesn't even matter what the undercard is like. You don't like to say that because, I mean, in the past it seemed like you needed two or three, you know, top-level fights to have those huge million-dollar buy shows. But it almost seems like those days are gone now. Like, does it really matter what's going to be on the undercard of this Rousey show or the next McGregor fight? Probably not. Even if you load them up with 10, like, name fights, it might not make that huge of a difference anymore at the box office. To cross that million threshold, it's mostly about the main event, I think, nowadays.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, although to play devil's advocate, I credit the UFC for when there's a pay-per-view, when they ask people to pay money, they have seemed to put forth much deeper cards. Like, even like UFC 206 coming up in a couple weeks, that's actually a pretty decently deep card for talent at the top. And obviously, you know, 207, that's a really good card. You have Rousey, you have Dominic Cruz, you have TJ Dillashaw, like, you have Cain Velasquez. Like, those four fights right there are like, that's a really, really fucking good card. And so I do think that they're acknowledging that, give people, you know, more bang for their buck. Make them, if they're going to pay 70, 60, 70 bucks, whatever a pay-per-view costs, I don't even look anymore, I just pay it. And, you know, give them a good pay-per-view. And if it's on free TV, it's on free TV. Like, most of these cards aren't going to do big business, and you kind of use it to, you know, feel out who may or may not be a star going forward. And also, in their defense, this card was supposed to have Rockhold and Jacare in the main event.
Absolutely.
That was an awesome, world-class, you know, low-level pay-per-view main event type of fight. And, you know, shit happens. And, you know, when you're doing a show on free TV, you can't afford to go two or three deep with really great fights. So they rolled the dice. It didn't work. They'll take a hit on the ratings. But you know what? Their contract's going to come up next year, and they're going to be hotter than ever because they'll be the only fucking sports property out there, and they'll probably make a lot of money going forward.
You would think. In retrospect, I'm almost surprised they didn't try and get Jacare to fight Whitaker or Brunson.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And shift the card around a little. And then, I mean, there's other – I'm looking at the lineup now. I mean – Dan Kelly versus Chris Camozzi is not a barn burner of a middleweight fight, but you could have moved one of those guys up to fight Whitaker or Brunson and then moved Whitaker or Brunson up to Jacare. Because they were both already training, Whitaker and Brunson. They were, I believe they were both already on the under, yep, the co-main of this show. So they could have probably done that. And I would think each one of them would be willing to do that, because it's a higher profile fight, and it really, if they beat Jacare, they're top five for sure. I mean, they're lower top 10 now, both of them, but that would catapult them.
Yeah. And I mean, it's possible that Jacare said no, but I think,
but if you were Jacare, wouldn't you rather fight one of them than Rockhold and get a win, a short note? I mean, Rockhold's a risky fight for Jacare. I mean, they fought before and it's very, very competitive when they fight. Would you rather smoke Robert Whittaker in his home country in Australia and get this big win, or roll the dice and maybe lose to Rockhold?
From our perspective, which is playing it objectively, yeah, that makes sense. From their perspective, fighters look at, you know, I have no gain from this, and I have all loss. That said, if I'm the UFC and I could force people, I think Jacare and Whittaker would have been the perfect fight. You would have had the home country guy versus the elite guy, and if Whitaker could have pulled it out, he'd be as big a star as you could pretty much get in Australia. And if Jacare wins, he gets an impressive win. I guess if you're Jacare, you're thinking, you know, maybe I don't fight, and I'm the guy that fights Bisping. And, you know,
true.
Now we know that Yoel Romero will probably fight him, but he's probably
thinking, yeah, I mean, Jacare got screwed.
Yeah.
If Jacare was still on this card fighting Brunson, people would be like, well, let's see how Jacare does. Yeah, Yoel had that big win, but maybe Jacare does something crazy and acts like an alligator and cuts a crazy promo. You know, you never know, but like he gambled by not fighting at all and risked one of the other two, whether it was Weidman or Romero, having a spectacular win, which Romero did. And now Jacare is still sitting out in the cold waiting for a fight. It could be two fights away from a middleweight title shot, depending on how everything works out.
Yeah, it's an interesting look into the mindset of how high-level fighters view things, because they're willing to risk it to fight somebody who's really, really, really great, who could easily beat the shit out of them. But when they got a guy like Whittaker, who Jacare, by, you know, on the feet or on the, obviously on the ground, would win, suddenly they're pulling back a little bit. And it's like, either way, if you lost, you would not have your title fight. But if you won, yeah, Whittaker's not as impressive as Rockhold. And maybe, again, I can't remember the extent of Rockhold's injuries. Maybe him and Jacare will fight in February or something like that. And he just thinks, I'll wait for it. But it's weird in that regard. But that said, these guys have a lot more on the line than we do. And it's easy for us to say, hey, just go out there and do it. And there's maybe, fuck me, man. Like, I say that, and then I'm like, there's no way they understand the ins and outs, the intricacies of this business. If they did, they'd be tweeting more and cutting promos and doing dumb shit. And instead, they just sit there and they win the fight and go, I just want to fight whoever comes up next. I don't, I'm a fucking moron. Matt Hamill. So, yeah, I think most of them are, I can't call them cowards because they want to fight just the best, but I think there's something to be said for when you get to a certain level, you're only willing to lose to the greatest, and when you're only willing to lose to the best, you sometimes don't, you miss out on the bigger picture. So, I mean, you know, Jacare, he fucking, again, we have no idea. Maybe he wasn't offered it, blah, 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 blah. But I would have, if I'm him, I would be like, fuck that shit. I'm going to fight in that card. I'm going to dominate a man. I'm going to come out and say, yeah, I deserve a title shot. But
yeah.
Even, you know what? What could Jacare really do? Even if he went out there, took Whittaker or Brunson down and choked him out in 30 seconds, Romero still had a huge, amazing knockout with the greatest show ever.
I agree, but you don't know that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's hindsight. For me, I would take the gamble and hoping it's a split decision, boring wrestle fest where, you know, Romero just lies on top of Weidman for three rounds and hope that happens and hope that I get a big win. Or maybe one of those guys gets injured and is off the card and that fight doesn't happen. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There were just options there that you couldn't foresee, and he didn't play any of them. He just, I want to say, took his bags and went home, but I don't know. I don't know enough to say for sure either way, but to me it's like, get on that card, stay in the mix, and see what happens.
Yeah.
And it did pan out.
Even though it's probably not logistically possible, ideally, if you're Jacare, I mean, there's, you know what? There's no reason they couldn't have just said, hey, Tim Kennedy, you're going to fight in a couple more weeks against Jacare.
Yeah.
And that would have been a really good main event, too.
Sure.
And the winner of that could have had a claim for the title shot. So, I mean, yeah, it's odd. I feel bad for the Melbourne people, except for they're at the Rod Laver Arena. So when you're naming a fucking sports arena after a tennis dude, like, I'm not going to feel too bad for you, because tennis, but
come on.
Yeah, no, it's fucking tennis. It's tennis. It's tennis. Come on. I mean, for fuck's sake. They have to wear all white at Wimbledon. Like,
well,
I say this even though, actually, I remember in 2004
2013, August 2013, I remember when Andy Roddick won the Andy Murray won the gold medal in the Olympics in Britain. I thought that was really a fucking cool moment, and I will watch that. I watch all sports, but tennis is like again. I watch.
No, I played tennis in high school and college. That's why. Sad. There was something else I was going to say. Oh, I was just looking on the old Twitter. You know what's trending right now?
Oh, no.
You'll like this. This will get you all pissed off, I'm sure. Recount 2016.
Oh, fuck off! For fuck's sake, people. Look, Hillary won the fucking popular vote. Trump won the fucking electoral vote. That's just what happened. It doesn't matter. Don't give me this shit. Oh, Hillary's really – she's more popular than both people. It doesn't matter. That's like changing the fucking rules of fighting after the fact and being like, well, that guy actually had more takedowns and we're only going to count takedowns and therefore he won the fight. No. Like maybe Trump would have campaigned differently. Maybe Hillary would have campaigned differently. You don't get to like – when you go by the rules in advance and just fuck off.
Well, they're – depending on what you read right now, there's this stuff coming out that there's voting irregularities all over the place in those swing states where it was not an actual ballot, it was computerized. People are talking like the systems got hacked or something. I don't know if this is going to catch any fire,
it's going nowhere. There are definitely voter irregularities in this election because Trump appealed.
He was irregular.
He was irregular, and he appealed to a different demographic. He took a lot of, I'll call blue collar, traditionally union votes away from Hillary, and Hillary did not have the ability to generate as much of the black and Hispanic vote that President Obama did, and therefore she lost. That's just what it really comes down to, like. Trump actually did better amongst Hispanics than Mitt Romney did, which is fucking befuddling given that his entire campaign is, I hate Mexicans. And, whatever. Like, people are going to make a deal out of this, and they'll give them time to go out there and do their shit. And I've actually written, like, a 5,000-word piece. I don't know if I'm going to publish it or not. It actually has nothing to do with this. It actually has to do with people like me who, even though I hate labels, if someone calls me conservative, fine. I'm not going to argue with it. Have a duty to ostracize and diminish the so-called rise of the alt-right. We should absolutely reject all of their racism and their weird Nazi shit and all that. Like, it has no place within the movement. And I liken it to the way that William F. Buckley did in the 1960s when he took on the John Birch Society and minimized them and said, you are crazy, you're irrational, you thought that Eisenhower was a communist, you guys are fucking out of your mind, so just piss off. And it's one of these things where people get so tribalized and they think, well, okay, they're on my side, kind of, so I'll just defend them. No. You have to be very consistent saying, what do I believe in? I believe in A, B, and C, not X, Y, and Z. And even if somebody believes in A, if they believe in X, Y, and Z as well, you don't let them into your group. You don't defend them. Just because somebody's a racist who wants to lower taxes, fuck off. I want to lower taxes. I don't support your fucking weird ass fucking I'm gonna hire Trump shit. That's really, really disturbing. And I say that knowing that there's a bit of a trollish element to what they're doing. I think that's what they're doing. But I say this.
Have you seen the people going to Starbucks and telling the barista or whatever that their name is Trump and the people working at Starbucks get all pissed off?
Fuck them. Fuck them so hard.
Which people? The people working at Starbucks or the people saying their name is Trump?
Fucking people saying their name is Trump. I did not vote for Trump. I did not vote for Hillary. It doesn't matter. I vote for Gary Johnson just because I can say I'm superior to people. I want to go into Starbucks and just say, what's your name? And I don't drink coffee. I get a hot chocolate. I want to say,
Yeah, I want to say not my president. Can you just yell that out? Because, like, it's so fucking stupid. Leave these fucking people alone. You're some fucking douchebag worth, like, $8 an hour at Starbucks. You don't give a shit about most of this. Yeah, one asshole fucking somewhere did. Most people don't care. It's like the people out there in Chicago. They're protesting the outside of Trump Tower in Chicago. Trump's not in the fucking building. All they're doing is yelling at bricks. There's Trump's not there. Most of his supporters, it's just a fucking high rise with office buildings, like office space and some apartments. There's some poor fucking janitor making minimum wage who just wants to go to work, clean up shit, literal shit from a toilet. And you guys are out there yelling and doing all this shit. And again, I honestly hope that it makes protesters feel good. I hope that you get something good out of it. Because if you don't feel better about yourself when it's over, you've accomplished nothing.
Well, the whole protest of the election is weird to me because it's like it was whatever, a fair election. Everybody went out and voted, and the result is the result. It is what it is. That was the will of the people. So to go out and protest that, I think is kind of counterintuitive. Like, granted, you didn't like the candidate that won, but it was still, as far as we know, everything's on the up and up. It's a fair election. The will of the people was what happened. So to go out and protest that is bizarre. I know they're not protesting the election or the system. They're protesting the candidate that won, but that's how it works.
Yeah.
Your person lost. What are you actually protesting? The guy's not even in office yet and hasn't even done anything. Wait for him to be in office and start fucking everything up. Then you have a reason to protest.
Exactly.
Right now you're just protesting the result of something. But then the other thing that gets me is the side that argues that they shouldn't be protesting. Like, that's an American, it's a liberty, it's a thing people can do. Maybe it's not the right time to protest, but that's their right. You shouldn't tell somebody they can't go out and march or picket or whatever. If it's a peaceful thing, it's a peaceful thing. Let people do what they want. Like, you can't control when and where somebody else does that or feels it's right, even if it's kind of lame, which I think it is in this situation. I think there's fault on both sides of that argument.
Exactly. And that's why I hope, and I'm not being facetious. I hope that the people protesting get something out of it. Because a protest, or a peaceable assembly, if you will, is to demand that those in power address a grievance. But
Or draw more attention to it.
Yeah.
But get more people on your side. Make them aware of the injustice.
Exactly. But we just had the election. Nobody out there is confused about what Donald Trump is. Nobody's like, oh, shit. I didn't hear about that pussy grabbing thing. Oh, fuck me. That came out of nowhere. Oh, if I'd known that, I would have voted for Hillary. Like, everybody knew it was a fair election. As far as we can tell, there's no real credible evidence that anything was manipulated. Because if Trump was going to manipulate things, would he really manipulate it where he lost a popular vote and won on electoral college? Of course not. It's fucking, that doesn't make any sense. So wait until he does something and then be like, I'm protesting. And then people go, why? Because right now, when you ask the question, why are you protesting, their answer is, well, because of all the things Trump said during his campaign. But we already had the decision on what he said during his campaign. Now, when he appoints somebody to an office, if you want to protest, so be it. If he makes an executive order, if he passes a law, protest your ass off. Otherwise, sure. And even if you don't feel good about yourself when it's done, you can tell yourself, I drew more attention to it. Right now, all you're doing is venting. And I think there's something good to that. I think there's a value to that. I think that people need to vent. I don't have a problem with anybody wanting to get together, go out there and march and protest and say, I hate this man. Fuck him. He's going to lock up my neighbor. He's a racist. He's a sexist. Even though my suspicion is deep down, Donald Trump is going to be more of a center-left president because I think he just craves attention and approval and the people who he'll be surrounded with are the elites, and he'll just do whatever he can to get their love. But either way, it's like nothing has happened. Like, people are angry. They're petitioning that he not let Steve Bannon, who, you know, ran Breitbart for a while, okay, he's just in a fucking advisor. He doesn't have any actual power. Like, people say, I don't want him to be in. What are you protesting? Like, do you actually think you can, like, if you want to protest Donald Trump's appointment of Secretary of Defense, State, whatever, fine. You can, therefore, you're signaling to your representative, do not vote for this man. Do not vote to approve this appointment. But Steve Bannon is just going to be an advisor. You don't have any say in that shit. Donald Trump is not, and Donald Trump is not the kind of guy that can be like, fuck me. Look at all these people complaining. I better probably step back for a second. Like, no, it doesn't fucking work that way. It's just, and that's why I really hope people feel better and feel a catharsis when it's all over, because otherwise all you're doing is making yourself angry and you're not accomplishing anything. And just for people's personal health, that doesn't do much. And again, I say this as somebody who, no matter what has ever happened in politics, whether my guy won or lost, I never felt the urge to protest.
Right.
I look at all of it as like, kind of like from a distance, like, my goal in life is to live my life in a way where whatever happens in D.C., I can avoid it. I don't want them to make any decisions that impact my life. And that's easy for me to say because I don't have a wife and kids, and I don't, you know, fuck, like you. You have a restaurant business, so the minimum wage could impact you. The Social Security deductions could impact you. Like, there's a lot of things that could impact the way that your life actually plays out in real time. And I'm right now, because of my, pathetic lifestyle I live, don't have to worry about that. But, you know, like, just, when the fuck has the president ever really given a shit about you? When has he ever done anything in your life you've given a fuck? Oh, they lowered the tax rate 1 or 2%. They raise it 1 or 2%.
Right.
What the fuck does that mean for most? Most people don't even pay income taxes.
They wouldn't even notice it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, it's just,
wouldn't even notice. Yeah,
it's just that's the beauty of the system that our founding fathers who were, I mean, goddamn, I know I'm a nerd. I was a guy that when I was 17, I was in my fucking history class in high school, and my teacher pulled out an article. He goes, "So I was reading the Chicago Tribune today, and I saw an editorial, a letter to the editor, and he started reading it. I go, oh shit." That's something I wrote to the Tribune, and he read it out loud. I had like 5 letters to the editor published in a year to the Tribune, between like 17 and 19. Yeah, I know. I'm a nerd. Like, when I was an undergrad, I found out later people called me the president because I knew so much shit about history and politics. And obviously, yeah. As a lawyer and all this stuff, like, I know a lot of this stuff, but like, it just let it go. Live your fucking life. They don't care about you. Nobody in D.C. gives a shit about any of us. Trump does not care about anyone. Hillary does not care about anyone. Bernie Sanders, I don't think he cares about people. I think he cares about ideas that can help people, but individual people, I don't really think he gives a shit. Anybody?
Well, how can, there's a lot of people. How can you?
Yeah, the best you can hope for is, honestly, like, President Obama implemented a lot of policies. Like, legislatively, I can't, like, some of the Affordable Care Act, it was passed by Congress. I disagreed with it. I didn't like it. But Congress passed it. So be it. That is the will of the people. My issues with President Obama were always his executive decisions. All the executive orders that he put out there, where he just said, I'm just going to do this by executive order. That, I thought that set a dangerous precedent. And now when Trump comes in, it's going to be, oh, fuck, we can't let that shit happen. Like, no, president can't just do whatever the fuck he wants. Like, but whatever. But I like, I thought President Obama did the, more or less a decent job as president. He did the job of, hey, I make cutesy videos. But like, I saw a video the other day. This cute little kid wrote a letter to Obama, and he said, "Dear President Obama, I saw that kid in Syria who needs help. Please let him know he can live with me and my sister. I'll teach him to ride a bike. We'll be friends. He'll be my new brother," and all this stuff. It was a really nice little letter that an 8-year-old dumbass kid writes. And Obama, you know, he had him over the White House. He's like, "So, is that a new suit?" And he's like, "Yeah." He goes, "Yeah. They usually make you wear a new suit when you come to the White House." Like, just really nice things like that. I'm like, there's no fucking way Donald Trump's doing that. Donald Trump is not meeting with a fucking 8-year-old who writes a nice letter saying, "Let the Syrian kid come and live in my house and I'll teach him how to ride a bike." Trump would be like, "No, we're going to get you a bigger bike. The biggest fucking bike you've ever seen. It's going to be huge, man. You're going to have the biggest bike ever. And it's not going to be a Syrian kid. It's going to be a nice white kid next door. Yeah, it's going to be great." Like, it's just weird and whatever.
How, as far as the executive order thing, though, goes, haven't all presidents done that throughout history? Like, Obama's not the first one to push through. Is it what he did that's the issue? Because it's not like he's setting a precedent for Trump with executive orders. I mean, the last Bush had more executive orders than Obama has so far.
It's not necessarily the number, but the extent to which, okay, Obama, like, he appointed all those czars to oversee things and just do shit. And it's a weird, it's historically, the way that it was set up was the founding fathers basically said, here's Congress, and we have the House of Representatives. That was supposed to be the governing body.
Right.
And, okay, there's, 435 of them, and they represent the people and so on and so forth. As a check against the tyranny of the mob, they have the Senate. So the Senate, obviously only 100 of them, a little more aloof. They have a longer term. They're 6 years, not two. So they can be a little more objective about what's going on. So they're a bit of a counterweight to the House of Representatives. And then there was the executive branch. The executive branch really existed as a head of state. And as Americans, we're very unique in that our head of state is also our head of the country. Take England, for example. They have a prime minister. He's not the head of state. The queen is. And in France, they have a president and a prime minister. One of them is the head of state. One is not. One of them is, in theory, to deal with international relations. One is not. In the United States, the executive office was really created first and foremost to deal with international relations. He was a check in some regards to Congress. He had the power of the veto.
Veto, yeah.
But that's really all the power the president has. Like, when people are like, "Oh, Trump's going to do this, this, and this," historically, he should not be able to do these things. Now,
right,
it's changed over time. I think the biggest shift happened under FDR, when we went from the president being a check to the president being somebody that needed to be checked. It's a bit of it's a difference. It's a subtle difference, but it's an important difference. And, an FDR, for good reasons or bad, really ruled as, I'll say, a singular power. He tried to pack the Supreme Court. Because there was constitutionally, there's no need for 9 Supreme Court justices. It doesn't say how many there are. And FDR was like, "Fuck that. I'll just add a whole bunch of them." And then they had what we call the switch in time to save 9 and shit like that. So, and so on and so forth. So the executive branch really should be the a weakened domestic branch of the government compared to Congress. Realistically, the most important person in America should be Paul Ryan. But we have, through history, through different machinations, whatever it may be, I think it's just the willingness of people to slide towards a singular presence, and the president has a bully pulpit that nobody else has, we have allowed the executive branch to have so much more power than any other branch. And so we think, well, Trump will just do X, Y, and Z, but he can't. You know, you just, there's a limit to what a president can do. Look at President George W. Bush, President 43, President Bush 43. His second term, and a lot of people kind of forget this, when he started his second term, it was not about Iraq. It was not about wars. His first big agenda was Social Security reform. He wanted to implement a semi-privatization of Social Security. But it failed. He did not have the support of Congress. And it was a big, big defeat for President Bush. He did not have, and after that, he saw a lot of his power diminish because he had a big loss. So presidents do not have nearly as much power if Congress demands it that people think. But unfortunately, we've kind of over time acquiesced and allowed them to have more power. And when we've seen President Obama, who's had these czars who are just going to do things and executive orders, and it's a very odd position because, you know, Congress passes a law, but it's up to the president to enforce the law. And the president realistically can just say, I'm not going to do it. Like, Congress passes a law. Supreme Court says, interprets, I should say, what the law means. And then the president, the executive branch, should implement it. But if the president just was to go out and say, hey, everybody in America, you don't have to pay taxes. I am commanding the IRS to not investigate you. There is realistically nothing anyone can do. Which, you know, so we're, as any, you know, semi-republic democracy, we're really beholden to hoping that our elected officials at every stage are rational and decent people. I don't know if we have that this time, but
in theory, though, it's on the people to figure that out and determine it. I mean, we made our own bed to a certain degree. I mean, that's kind of the idea of a democracy. Hopefully, you know, if you get the wrong person in there, you can get them out. And I mean, that was kind of an issue with FDR, I guess, in some ways people would argue. But, we've gone way off the rails here at this point.
No, and that's a good thing. And again, coming back to the Founding Fathers, the brilliance of what they did was even when the American people fuck up, and elect somebody who may be a megalomaniac television star, there's only so much he can actually do, and such is life.
Yeah. I don't know what to make of this whole election, and now there's talk of a recount. This thing is crazy.
There's one more thing for you to talk about.
What do you mean?
There's one more thing for you to ask me about.
Hang on. I can figure it out. I forget what it was. It was something weird that I didn't really know what you were talking about. The Presidential Medal of Freedom.
Yeah. Fuck you, Obama.
Okay. Go ahead.
The greatest honor any American...
Oh, by the way, this should probably be two shows.
Oh, it should be, but it won't be. It's a holiday weekend. People are traveling, and we need to give them shit to talk about and run the dinner table. Anybody who fucking puts this show on at Thanksgiving dinner, I swear to fuck I will give you $500. It does not apply to Matt. So, the Presidential Medal of Freedom.
I wouldn't do that anyway, but go on.
I would. The greatest honor any American can receive is the Medal of Honor, right? You go out there, and the Medal of Honor has only been rewarded like 200 some odd times over the years. It's the greatest honor anyone can receive, and it's only eligible for military personnel. The civilian equivalent...
It's the Medal of Freedom, not the Medal of Honor,
No,
right?
I'm getting to it.
Sorry.
The civilian equivalent is the Presidential Medal of Freedom. So it should be looked at as in the same regard as the Medal of Honor. And the Medal of Honor goes to guys like the subject of the new Mel Gibson movie, Hacksaw Ridge. The guy who is a pacifist, who refused to carry a weapon, and yet went to fought in Okinawa, saved over 75 lives without carrying a weapon, all by himself, risked his life to save his fellow man, and he got the Medal of Honor. That's what a Medal of Honor gets. And like, and it's not something that they hand out willy-nilly. Like, this is shit that the military takes real, really seriously. Like, number two is, like, I think the Silver Star, which Brian Stann received, which says a lot, of, actually, about Brian Stann. It's always been one of the things I'm like, every time I want to make fun of him, I'm like, fuck me, you got that fucking Silver Star. This is not like a Purple Heart for getting wounded or something like that. Like, that's a big deal. The Presidential Medal of Freedom, again, is this the civilian equivalent. And I don't know what President Bush, Reagan, Clinton did with it offhand. I do know that President Obama gave it out to a bunch of fucking people who in no way, shape, or form fucking deserved it ever. The Presidential Medal of Freedom should go to nuns helping out AIDS patients with bleeding sores on their dicks. Like, that's what it should go to. It should go to people who go above and beyond in the civilian world to make America and their fellow man better. And instead, he gave it to Michael Jordan. Michael fucking Jordan, who was a great basketball player, but who's a sociopath, who destroyed everyone in his path in order to win, who spent his career stepping on people so he could hawk Gatorade and Nike. He has not, he's called a Mother Teresa. Not, well, the idea of Mother Teresa, not the Christopher Hitchens reality. But not fucking Michael Jordan or Tom Hanks. What the fuck? Tom Hanks? Anybody that you know should not get the fucking Medal of Freedom. It's bullshit. He gave it up to some people that deserved it. One of the women, there's a woman who was very instrumental in some of the code that helped with the moon landing. Great! Recognize people like that. Don't give it to Ellen. And what's funny is, like, I actually really admire Ellen because it's in our day and age, if somebody came out, was on TV and said, oh, by the way, I'm gay, everyone would be like, eh, whatever. When Ellen came out, even though I was a little younger, that was a big deal. She was on ABC, there was a Disney channel, a Disney affiliate, all this shit. Like, that was a big, kind of groundbreaking moment. You could almost argue, almost for Ellen, but not Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan just had a great fadeaway jump shot. And I love that man. He's the greatest thing that ever happened to Chicago, but fuck off. And again, I don't know who President Bush gave it to, or President Clinton, or President Bush, or President Reagan, whatever. But it seems to me like they just gave it to a bunch of fucking rich people who are already famous. Tom Hanks got one. Fucking Michael Jordan. They don't need this shit. It's just stupid. And I'm sorry, but when you award somebody the Presidential Medal of Freedom, you should never utter the words Space Jam. That's just a fucking rule, all right? And it just diminished the award. But look, it's 100% at President Obama's discretion. I can't, he can do whatever he wants. I don't think he should have done it. But, I mean, just fuck off. Come on. Can't anything be sacred? Can't anything mean something? Why do we have to make every fucking decision about a press opportunity? This is good for President Obama. Oh, I gave it to Michael Jordan. I got to make a cute joke with Michael Jordan and all these things. Like, no, stick to your really funny videos with Joe Biden. Those are great. I love the videos with Joe Biden. I think the Joe Biden memes are the greatest things ever. I wish Joe Biden was going to be president next. But don't give Michael Jordan a fucking award that is on par, basically, with the Medal of Honor. Michael Jordan's a dickhead. He's a fucking asshole who one time, when he's with the Bulls, lost at ping pong, playing with the guys, went back to his house, got a ping pong table, practiced all the time for six straight fucking months and then demanded that they all come over so he could beat them at ping pong. He's a dickhead. Michael Jordan fucking gambled on basketball, probably. All kinds of sports. Probably had a semi-suspension from basketball that they kept hush-hush because he's such a big deal. His dad probably got killed by a bookie or some shit like that. Like, Michael Jordan is a dick. He's objectively a dick. I don't think he's happy in life. I think he is just a sociopath who worked really hard. The greatest basketball player of all time. No doubt in my mind. Six titles for Chicago. Love the man for doing it. He ain't somebody that we should all look at and be like, that's the fucking guy. He fucking... he's not Jesse Owens. Like, Jesse Owens should get a Medal of Freedom. Jesse Owens or Jackie Robinson. Even Muhammad Ali. These are men that overcame incredible, incredible odds. Horrible, horrible discrimination. They deserve it. A guy that had a song, I Want to Be Like Mike, and is worth $1 billion because you could put a ball through a hoop, does not deserve the highest civilian order in the world. Stop treating it like Britain does when they just knight people because, oh, you had a top 10 single? Oh, you're a fucking knight now. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Sir Elton John, Sir, you know, the dude from Oasis and all that shit. Just stop it. So I'm done. Yeah.
Yeah. I was just reading about it while you were ranting for the last few minutes. And Obama's given out the most by far. He seems to be pretty liberal with his usage of the award, more so than any president in history.
That's because he doesn't have a birth certificate, so he doesn't care. Boom, motherfuckers.
You know what else is interesting? Do you know how the Presidential Medal of Freedom came to be?
I do not off the top of my head, no.
It was actually an executive order in July of 1945, which was FDR still alive then? He was still alive, right?
No, yeah. July 1945 would have been Truman.
Okay, so Truman signed this into it as an executive order. So it all comes back to that. It's kind of interesting.
So there you go, everybody. Michael Jordan got an award created by the man that dropped the atomic bomb on Japan.
He's 1 degree of separation away from that. That's amazing. All right. I think we've gone almost 3 hours again. It's actually Thanksgiving now, so happy Thanksgiving to you.
No,
at
it's
least
not.
On the East Coast.
No, it's not. East Coast doesn't count. The Midwest counts. The West Coast counts. Mountain Time counts. East Coast, fuck you guys. You're all self-centered. But yeah, this show went way too fucking long. But people have a long drive ahead of them, and somebody will have their drive improved. They have to explain to their children why this madman who once ranted about mens rea and used Latin terms is now saying, fuck you, you motherfucking cocksuckers. So yeah, it's a good show.
That's why it's a good show. Yes. Happy Thanksgiving. Good luck being by yourself the next few days. I hope that ends okay for you.
If I'm alive, we'll know in a couple of days, won't we? Or next week.
Probably before then, but yeah.
All right. Say goodbye to everybody, Matt.
Goodbye. Thanks for listening. Happy Thanksgiving. Have a good weekend. Hopefully most people are off, get a little break. I don't, but that's my problem. Have a good one. See you next week.
Bye.
Aggressively, we all defend the role we play. Regrettably, times come to send you on your way. We've seen it all. Bonfires of trust, flash floods of pain. It doesn't really matter, don't you worry, it'll all work out. No, it doesn't even matter, don't you worry, that ain't what it's all about.
We hope you enjoy your stay. It's good to have you with us, even if it's just for the day.